I discover no kinship, no understanding, no mercy. I see only the overwhelming indifference of nature.
Yours, mine,
theirs. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, the world's fourth greatest movie podcast, where we watch movies based on what you make us watch, usually in a interesting and exciting narrow subgenre, and we are talking about People Alone in the Wilderness. And I am Roy. I came here to kill Grizz and then get decapitated by Grizz, but there ain't no more Grizz, so I guess I'm Natty Gandu either.
Right, okay. Hey, I'm John, and I may just be a head sticking up out of the dirt, but that's all I need.
I'm Ammon. I've been accused more than accused or compliment or bear myself, although I will always see myself as a scrappy, plucky, quasi-orphan on the streets of Chicago.
Well, hey, welcome, everybody. Ammon, welcome back for our Wilderness
Thanks.
Episode.
I'm excited to be back. I'm excited to be doing my community service talking about bear movies.
Mostly bear movies. Okay.
My favorite genre.
So the genre we're doing is A Person Alone in the Wilderness, and I don't know if we watched any movies with A Person Alone in the Wilderness.
No.
So because one of the movies...
Right.
They're alone about a third of the time. And then in another movie, it's hard to tell because we know that our protagonist had a companion with him, and I don't know how often. And then the third movie is just a road trip.
So. Yeah.
Well, a road trip where she ends up alone in the woods some.
For about 10 minutes.
Should we rename the genre to Lonely Posers? Because, yeah, there was just these people associate with people more than I associate with people. They're supposed to be more lonely in the wilderness. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was waiting. I was like, I watched Grizzly Man last, and I was like, he's definitely going to be alone. And then he was never alone.
Yeah.
I was like,
So I think it was hard to tell because they said that, like, sometimes he was alone, but often he had a girlfriend up there with him. Who just was never – anyway, we'll get there. But
we'll get there.
We are watching – he loved – anyway, we're watching Jeremiah Johnson. We are watching The Journey of Natty Gann, which doesn't fit in the genre. And then we're also watching Grizzly Man. So those are our three movies. And
also we watched those already. We're not about to watch
That's
them.
True. Or, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're not on TV right now.
8 hours ahead of us here while we watch them together.
Yeah. Pause now, which we're going to do while we watch them. No, so these are fairly different films. You got kind of the Disney family film. You got the early 70s wilderness movie. And then you've got a documentary with a German documentary with Werner. And I don't know why, but when I hear Werner Herzog, all I can think about is the movie Dead Snow. I don't think he directed that.
I was going to say I've not seen that one. All I can think about now is Baby Yoda and how much he apparently loves that thing.
Maybe one of the Nazis in Dead Snow was named something Colonel Herzog or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
What does Baby Yoda love?
Baby Yoda loves Werner.
Werner loves Baby Yoda. So you remember that he plays the first sort of
The one who wants Baby Yoda.
Yeah, and like apparently when he did that, he knew nothing about Star Wars. But in interviews after, for like months, he would just talk about how taken he was with the Baby Yoda doll. Like it was apparently the most. And maybe he would change his views about chaos and madness after he hung out with Baby Yoda. He was apparently obsessed with it. Yeah. So
can we talk briefly about the episode where Baby Yoda almost caused an entire species to go extinct? Because he was hungry.
that episode was probably directed by Werner.
Right, that's the true nature of
that's
nature.
Probably my favorite episode of that show. To be clear, by the way, Mandalorian spends more time alone in the wilderness than any of the people that we. Although I guess again, he's got Baby Yoda, but Baby Yoda doesn't really talk. So
yeah,
Mandalorian has more pelts than Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
He's taken on stowaways than Natty Gann.
You guys, is there anything you guys want to catch up on before we just jump right on into?
Yeah, let's get going. These, like you said, I think that even more than last time, these are very different movies. I'm having a hard time comparing them. Well, I found some things, but I'll be curious what you guys have.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Okay. Jeremiah Johnson is our official Mountain Man movie because the narrator tells us at the beginning that Jeremiah Johnson has come to be a mountain man. So that's his deal. He shows up. Does he get off a boat? He's on a boat, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not going to go into that much detail. He shows up in the wilderness because he wants to be a mountain man, and we see him in the snow early on, and he hasn't built the shelter, and he doesn't know how to light a fire, and then we see him months later, still without a shelter, and somehow with all of his fingers, I have no idea how he survived the winter. He did better, though, than was the guy's name Hatchet Jack?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hatchet Jack.
Yeah. Hatchet Jack tried to chop up his wife and kid. But got lost in the hedge maze outside, and that's where Jeremiah Johnson found him.
This was not the only shining appearance in these movies.
Wow.
So the good news for Jeremiah Johnson is he runs into Bear Claw. So he's no longer alone. I think
he was delicious.
I think there was about 15 minutes of this movie until Bear Claw shows up. By the way, the movie starts like it has an entree act, right? It has an overture. It's got an overture, and I kind of feel like it tries to be a musical. It's got an intermission. It's a 2-hour movie with an intermission, and there are 4 songs. But I don't know if you call this a musical, but anyway.
It seems nobody like a movie seems that requires. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
for it to be a musical, somebody has to sing in it.
So
yeah.
This is more like Savannah Smiles musical style.
Right.
Yeah, it's exactly like Savannah Smiles in every way. Yes.
Well, anyway.
Savannah Smiles too, actually.
So Bear Claw shows up, and that's good news because he teaches him how to sleep in a cabin instead of outside, although they end up sleeping outside anyway, but then they build these fiery pits that they sleep on to stay nice and warm. He learns how to kill Grizz. You know how you can throw a baby into the water and they'll learn how to swim, which, by the way, I don't believe that's actually true, but, you know, people say that. Well, Bear Claw does the same thing for Jeremiah Johnson and locks him in the cabin and then brings the Grizz into the cabin, and Jeremiah Johnson somehow came out on top of that one. Anyway, Bear Claw moves on because he's got to go kill more Grizz. He's with Bear Claw when he meets Paints His Shirt Red for the first time and the other crows, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we meet the crows, who are a little aggressive. Oh, by the way, I am happy to note that the Native Americans in this movie are portrayed by Native Americans. I guess they just kind of went around to some of the northern Utah tribes and asked people if they wanted to be in a movie. So
is that really true? Yeah. I was wondering.
Well, that's what IMDb says, and so far it's not never been incorrect. So
it's the right choice, and I think it was also a practical choice because they're like, okay, let's just go where the mountains are, and also, you know, where the Native Americans. I think
so. While out there, they're like, we're bound to run into mountains.
I mean, at some point we're going to have to discuss the fact how much this movie was filmed like 10 feet from where we all grew up.
I know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
to the extent where I recognize specific spots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely been hiking there.
No, so one of the first shots they show is that the big bowl that Stuart Falls is in.
Yeah. That's, I think, when he meets – is that when he meets – that's when he's being super loud, right? And
yeah.
Is that when Bear Claw was like, hey, I could hear you from miles away, right?
So I
now, wait.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I think we're getting – Bear Claw wasn't with him. Wasn't it the other guy? Wasn't it Del Gue who was with him?
Yes, you're right.
It's Del Gue. Bear Claw's buried.
Okay,
yeah, not when he meets – okay. The first guy he meets is Del Gue, right?
No. He meets Bear Claw well before he meets Del Gue, because he meets Bear Claw, who basically teaches him to survive, and also they run into the crow for the first time, and he recognizes the red paint on the arrow, which is important for a later plot point. And then their horses are about to get stolen by the crow. You remember, because Bear Claw shows him how to hunt, and he's like, well, I can't get a clean shot of the elk because he'll see us moving. He's like, well, walk behind the horse. Won't the elk notice my feet? And I think, what does he say? Like, elk don't know how many feet a horse has. But so they do that hunting, and then they end up having to give their furs to the crow so as to not lose their horses. So anyway, long story short, it is Bear Claw that he meets the crow with.
Okay.
Bear Claw goes away. He then meets the crazy lady who's gone crazy because her husband's dead. So now he's got a mute kid that's hanging out with him. And then he runs into Del Gue. Del Gue's head, Delgi right. was buried up to his neck, which is actually pretty cool. I'm a big fan of that. And then he, so Delgu, that darn Delgu. So who do they run into? Do they run into Blackfeet, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the Blackfeet who took Delgu's horse, and Delgu takes his horse back and he scalps a bunch of the Blackfeet. And then they're riding along and Delgu like slips the Blackfeet scalps onto Jeremiah Johnson's horse in case they run into Blackfeet again so that he won't get killed. Then they meet the Flatheads? Right?
Yeah, I looked to see if that was a slur, and I don't think it is, but I definitely didn't feel comfortable.
Is the Flathead term, is that the term for the Arrowheads?
No, that is a specific tribe. Yeah.
But is it the name of the tribe because that's how they have their arrowheads? Maybe. I don't know why.
Yeah. But the Flatheads are so impressed with Jeremiah Johnson's scalps and the horses that he stole. But Jeremiah Johnson says, well, you can have them. I don't really want them. And then, oh, boy, now they're in trouble because they got to come up with a better gift. So long story short, he gets married, and Delgu tells him, if you don't get married, they're going to kill us. So he marries Swan. Is her name Swan? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's Swan.
Yeah.
She's lovely. He's not really into it because he didn't want to get married, but that doesn't keep him from taking a peek. Probably the first lady he's ever checked out. And anyway, good for him. So they start to get along. Things are going well. Eventually, we know they at least kissed because his beard chafed her face. And then as things are just going swimmingly, that's when the group comes through. Is it a military group that's got that minister with them?
Lieutenant Mulvey.
Yeah, and Reverend Lindquist.
Lieutenant Mulvey was his name.
Yeah, and basically... They've got some pilgrims or whatever, not pilgrims, I'm sorry. They've got some folk who've been lost and left behind, and they got to go rescue them. And the quickest way to get to them, because it's winter, is they got to get there quick, brings them right through Crow burial grounds. And this is a weird part. So I get that you're not supposed to travel right through it, but it also seems like you could like kind of do a semicircle around it, but they go right through it because they have no choice. And so I want to believe that we don't see it, but they're all dead later because they violated the Crow burial grounds. On the way back, Jeremiah Johnson, as he's looking at the Crow burial grounds, he notices something. And this is something I don't understand. Like, what did he see that freaked him out and made him run home?
I think he sees people. I mean, he knows that they were seen going through it is the sense that I get, right?
I thought he saw something on one of the dead bodies.
Oh,
like he was looking at one. John, do you have any idea? Are you still?
No, I didn't catch that. It was. I remember thinking, oh, he's suddenly running down the mountain. There was some clue that he got. Oh shoot, we all missed it. We're terrible.
No, we did. Like he. There was some visual clue that freaked him out. Anyway, he runs back to the cabin. Wife and kid are dead, which is actually pretty awful. And then he burns down the cabin. Which I bet he regrets later because it's cold up in those mountains. But then he, in his anger, he goes and finds the group of Crow that did it. Now, I have another question for you. There was an arrow in the door with the red stripe on it. Does that mean that Paints His Shirt Red was there and was part of this party? Or does it just mean that it's his tribe? Does everyone in his tribe have the same red painted arrow?
You're way better at 19th century forensics.
But they made a point of it. Yeah. He like pulled the arrow out of the door and he looked at the red stripe on it. Right?
Is that the thing he saw in the body too?
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, because that would make sense if it's like, oh, okay, like here is, you know, these Crow are kind of they're doing a course down here, and you know, this is like one set here, and you know, they're heading in the direction of my mountain family.
Could be. So yeah. He does find the maybe three or four Crow that we assume attacked his house. They did still have kind of their face paint on. And then he kills most of them. And then one of them starts singing and he kind of maybe he's too tired and he's just done. But then for the rest of the movie, basically, we run into Delgu again. We run into Bear Claw again, but the point is that the Crow are coming for him, and they only come one person at a time, which I guess is good for him. But he manages to kill every warrior they send after him. And that's essentially the second half of the movie is him not, is him killing the warriors who come for him. And then at the very end, he sees, paints his shirt red and paints his shirt red, puts his hand up. And what I can assume is the symbol for we're done now, no more killing each other. And Jeremiah Johnson looks like with some difficulty kind of agrees to that compromise. But, and then the movie ends right there. So.
There's a lovely song.
We do learn that Bear Claw killed every grizzly in the state of Utah because there's none left.
Personally.
now, it's not Utah, though.
It's not supposed to be Utah. It's just the Rocky Mountains.
He starts off in Utah. They do mention that he starts in Utah at some point, right? I think the river at the beginning is the Green River, which is mostly in Utah. In which my father insists is the actual Colorado River to the extent that he doesn't call the Colorado River the Colorado River. He calls it the Grand River. That's a long story, which we don't need to get into.
Okay.
But I think that's where it begins. And I think that's stipulated at some point. I can't remember how they mention it, but.
Well, they said the only Utah reference I got was when he finds Delgue's head. And he goes,
"Oh, the Mormons.
You know, did Flathead put you here?" And he goes, "It weren't Mormons."
Yeah.
And I think that's the only reference. That's the only reference I got anyway.
Okay. Maybe it was just that whatever the summary that I had pulled up like on the video, I rented it from Google Play. That was my product placement for the day. Nice. They couldn't get my Amazon to work with it. And it said, Jeremiah Johnson goes off into the wilds of Utah, right? And so maybe that's why I was going with that. And then because it was in fact Utah, because it was like 10 feet from where we grew up, I was like, oh, they're in Utah. But interestingly, so a lot of the tribes that he encountered, I don't think were historic. They were more like associated with Montana and Wyoming.
Yeah.
So did they not do their research super well, or is that he wandered up north? I don't know.
I don't know. Right. Because he didn't run into any Utes or Navajo.
Right.
Or
You know, where we lived, right, was a large group of youths lived there. Yeah. And we won't get into all the shameful things that are now right by Will's Pit Stop where I grew up. But when I grew up, I had no idea of any of that, of course, because I was a foolish child.
Yeah.
But so, hey, I looked up about the Flathead, if you were curious. Okay. It is not the preferred name anymore, but it's not like – like, it's still a name that is used, but it's not – so it's not, like, super – we're not going to get in trouble for using it as far as I can tell. So I could be wrong, and if so, I apologize. But it is the preferred name for them is the Salish people.
Huh.
And Salish. So supposedly they were called Flatheads because people claimed that they bound the infant skulls with boards, which is a common practice in some indigenous tribes. In fact, they never did that, but the people nearby them bound their heads vertically. So they were flathead by comparison to their neighbors.
Interesting.
White folks called them, but they called themselves the Salish.
So it was like an optical illusion. They had normal, non-bound heads, but just standing next to the nearby tribe, it's like, oh, we're going to call them flatheads.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Huh. Wow. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know anything about that headbind thing.
But yeah, I mean, I think that the Crow and the Blackfoot also are both, you know, those are all plains tribes. And again, you know, people move around a lot, so that's fine. But that made me sort of, again, Roy spent all his time wondering, doing the forensic work. I was trying to do the anthropological work and coming up equally. But here's my sort of story of what he did, or the geographical work. My sense is that he started in Utah and then gradually moved north.
Yeah.
That's the story I'm sticking to. But anyway.
Sounds good.
Okay. Who knows?
We definitely know he started in Provo Canyon and Aspen Grove. And,
yes. You know. That's right.
And yeah, so it was just pretty much just like, first day of filming. Okay. Step one, Robert Redford, walk out of your cabin in Sundance Canyon. All right, now we'll just get this shot here. And that's how they started. That's just an efficient way to get that first shot.
So there's a scene late in the movie where he's in a...
Presumably this is when he first went there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because this is before Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, right?
Because
I don't think
This is like early, all this that is early 70s, not late 70s. Yeah.
So
it's pretty close.
I think he was...
Yeah.
But he was probably already homesteading up there, just like Jeremiah Johnson was.
Oh, man. So one thing that this movie is super famous for many years later, and very few people know it unless you've been on our Facebook page, because I just don't stop mentioning it, is this is the movie that the agreeable mountain man GIF comes from. The guy who slowly nods at you as you zoom in. So there you go. For those of you who listen but don't go to our webpage, you missed oversaturation of that GIF. So
don't worry. It will still be on the internet. You can go look it up right now, in fact.
Just so everybody's clear, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was 1969.
Oh, well, shows what we know.
Yeah, Jeremiah Johnson is 72.
So maybe he did own the land by this point, and so he's like, I know a free place to film.
I don't recall a lot of, like, northern Utah stuff in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So it may have it probably came about from this rather than Butch Cassidy.
I
don't know.
Well, it's hard to say. So I will tell you, he was alone for 38 minutes in total.
Oh, good.
You timed it.
I did. I had, like, a stopwatch, and I'd hit the pause button every time he gained a companion. And I don't count animals as a companion. Thank heavens for the Journey of Natty Gann, because that's going to help it get 13 minutes instead of zero.
But only so you timed all of them.
Yeah, I timed all of them. Well, except for Grizzly Man. I was timing Grizzly Man. They're like, yeah, most of the time he was up there with his girlfriend. I'm like, what? So I stopped there. You'll be happy to know this movie cost a mere $3 million and made $45 million. So, good for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good work. Well, that's about the land.
Yeah. What do you guys? Do you have any other thoughts on this film? Anything we didn't already talk about?
Well, I just found it interesting. Speaking of Werner Herzog and Star Wars, I found it interesting that that Jeremiah Johnson pulls a full Anakin Skywalker. One bad thing happens to his family, and so then after that, it's not just vengeance on those who perpetrated that act, but it's genocide.
So let me ask you, right? Because I thought about that at first. I'm like, oh, this is the movie where he goes crazy, and then he just goes and hunts down a bunch of crow. But so he kills the party that attacked his family, but then from that point forward, he's not seeking it out. Right, I mean, they're coming at him, and he just kills the ones that attack him.
I think, okay. It felt to me like he was posturing a bit like, come at me, guys, come at me, you know?
He was putting up that that smoke.
That was my...
Yeah, so, like, wanted them... Well, maybe I just kind of, like, chose to read it that way, but it's just like, okay, no, I'm going deeper into their country.
Hmm. So, that's possible.
I thought he was on, like, a quest. Because because the way that I sort of read the arc of this, right, is, like, he's a Mexican-American war veteran, right? So he's just finished literally fighting to take all this land from Mexico, who also apparently owned it, because, of course, Mexico and the Ute and Flathead people are the exact same also, apparently. So he goes up there, right, and now he's like, okay, now I'm going to retire, and I don't want to be around anybody. But then, as Roy was pointing out, he's very bad at not being around anybody. So the way that I read the movie is, like, he, like, doesn't want to be around people until he's forced to get married and adopt this kid who he doesn't really want to do. But then it's like he loves them, and he's like, okay, now we're a happy family, and they kill his family, and he's like, okay, now I'm going to be alone, and also I'm going to go be alone and hunt you guys down while I'm being alone. That was how I read it.
So interestingly enough, it's based off of a true story, and the guy's real name is John Johnston, but his nicknames were Crow Killer and Liver Eater Johnston.
Ooh, yeah. Jake. I would also have accepted Jake Johnson or Fatty Johnson. Fatty Jake. Yeah.
John Johnson.
Well, because also I think another theme that I saw running through all these is moments where they almost became 80s teen comedies. And if his name was Jake Johnson, then it would have been he would have been like the football player up there in the woods by himself.
Oh, man.
And that would have been a whole movie too. But so I read online about this. There's arguments as to whether or not this is pro or anti. Like, is this a movie about how pointless the fight between white settlers and American Indians was, or is this a war that sort of a movie that glorifies it? The internet seems to be divided by this.
Right.
I definitely felt uncomfortable with a lot of it because it felt a little close to like watching genocide unfold at times to me. But apparently it's ambiguous. So,
I mean, the way I took it, it's kind of about like the futility and the naivete of just assuming you can coexist. Coexist is a bad word, but it's just like, okay, coexist with someone you didn't make arrangements with. Like, the land is big enough so we can get what we want and they can get what we want, what they want. But it's just, it's naive to think that because human nature is, it just doesn't succumb to that unless you actually come together and agree and decide on things rather than just sneakily living in someone else's backyard and hoping they don't notice. yeah. That's how I saw it.
So yeah. I googled what do Native Americans think of the movie Jeremiah Johnson, and it's like 40-60, but 60% seems to be that it's not received well. And so one of the articles though says, the legend has it that Johnston killed, scalped, and devoured the livers of over 300 Indians.
Oh shit! That's Which why his name
seems,
was.
That seems yeah. a little excessive.
That's
yeah.
That's a lot of livers.
That's got to be a tall tale, right?
That's got to be a tall tale.
That's sure, a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One, to be clear, one is too many. Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. One is I guess too many.
Yeah. Right. I mean, but, I hate liver.
So can I say, like, and I feel really bad about this because I know of the extraordinary unethical treatment of the geese, but foie gras is really tasty.
Oh, that is very good. You're right. So I have had goose liver, which is, you're right, is fantastic. Yeah. Not that I've ever had it, but it's very good. That I've ever had it again.
It's super yummy, and they force feed those geese through a tube in their throat, which...
Yeah. So, you know. I've only eaten very ethically consumed foie gras, and that's the story I'm sticking to.
Anyway.
So the whole thing about how he meets his eventual wife, right? It's like kind of like a forced marriage on both of them, right? And, like, that also didn't sit great. I can see if I was a viewer, an indigenous viewer, I would – and trying to, like, that didn't sit great. Like, I don't think that's a great representation of actual gender relationships in tribes. Mm. But again, it is what it is in the 70s in America.
Well,
like, a lot of things, I tried to watch it from that lens, like, yeah. Okay, like, this is, you know, this is a period piece, right? This is a long time in the past. It's 50 years ago that it was made now, yeah. Which is wild.
So I also wonder though, like, was that a thing in some Native American tribe cultures that
I had to wonder how
could barter your daughter?
Just because I don't know how sustainable it is to make deals where you have to keep one-upping deals, and if you can't one-up, you just murder the person you're making a deal with.
Yeah.
It must be a weird thing they make it up, but I mean, maybe there's some truth in that. I don't know. Who did the research on that one?
There is. The potlatches, right? So the term potlatch is the tribes on the Northwest. I'm going to say that it's Boas, B-O-A-S, whose work is – and I don't want to go too far into stuff. So this is a classic sort of American or maybe Canadian, but anthropologist. And they engaged in sort of extreme forms of gift giving that involved that one-upmanship. Hmm. They were a very different tribe than the tribes that we're talking about here, though. But, I mean, yeah, historically there are lots of stories of, you know, indigenous groups and other groups that, you know, gift giving is a thing. And – you know, historically, a lot of societies have used marriage as ways of cementing alliances. However, it felt a little flippant in the way that those things happened here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was like comedic, right? Because Delview was like the clown movie, right? It's like, you've done it now.
You just got yourself into it.
If you don't get married, they're sure as heck going to take our scalps, right?
And it fits into the whole tall tales, right? Yeah.
No, you're fine. So, part of me thinks that Robert Redford, that he made this movie because maybe he just you can tell he loves the land, right? And so I think it's a showcase of the beauty of the Rockies. But do you think that he thought he was doing right? Because I think most of his interactions with Native Americans in this movie are peaceful and like it's his character like showing respect and whatever. But then the second half of the movie is him killing all the crow in all the world.
Yeah. So was
he's
he?
He's outpacing Bearclaw with Grizz and Crow.
The director was Sidney Pollack, not okay. Redford. No, was you're Redford right. the? But again, like I mean, Pollack and people have also compared this to Altman. Is Altman the one who did what the hell? Like Standing. I'm trying to blank. I'm blanking on the names of these. There's a couple of these movies that came out in the early 70s. And they all, and that's why I'm sort of saying the period piece, like for the time they were trying to be a lot more sensitive than the sort of the old school 50s and 60s cowboy shoot 'em up movies, right?
Yeah.
I do think that that's true. Like we're trying to see that like these are people who have their own complex motivations too, et cetera. But, you know, I think that they still fell pretty short. I'd be curious what Redford thought of his involvement in it. He's still around, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. He yeah.
Is. No, I'd like to hear him say it. I mean, I don't want to say it's like this is the we say this on this podcast all the time. Like, you know, what does this movie mean? What are they trying to say? And you know, at the time it was made, like I don't want to say at the time this was made, it was okay to kill a bunch of Native Americans. Right, but I do yeah. want to say at the time this was made, they made a movie about a guy killing a bunch of Native Americans and. What do you think of that? It's not the lesson of the movie right. is to do that. You know, it's and I think at the time there was just we allowed a little bit more leeway because we allowed like maybe this is what they're saying. And at this time we're a little bit more critical about like, OK, you know what? We understand what you're saying, but you have to do it. You have to say it in a more gentle way that can't be misinterpreted because we don't want misinterpretation now.
Yeah.
We can't afford it as much anymore, you know? That's kind of way I lean. Like yeah. it's a violently like, okay, this is what, we came and did, and it's not okay. But we're not going to, spend the time to say it's not okay.
Yeah. So Robert Redford describes this as one of his favorite movies that he's ever done. So
oh, okay.
This is one of there his favorites. Go. And he says that he especially loves the ambiguous ending where it ends at that confrontation where you're not really sure what happens next. Although I think we're supposed to understand that they kind of go their separate ways. That
yeah. They're like, we're done.
Right. Yeah. A truce has been struck or whatever. Right.
Yeah. Now, his wife was Blackfoot. Is that correct?
No, she's Flathead.
She's Flathead. Okay. All right. My bad. I was just wondering there. Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, and it is a visually stunning movie, right? Like, mm-hmm. the vistas are amazing. There's a lot to love about it. I just felt really, you know, I felt weird and complicated about the representations. And I do think that probably there was this emphasis on like, you know, trying to make the story more nuanced. But it's hard to make a story nuanced when we don't know as much as we think we do. Right. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. It's like we're saying we're making it nuanced.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
I felt very nostalgic for home while I watched it because it was like where we grew up was probably what like a 20 minute drive from where most of them if that
it's weird because I've lived most of my life I guess the second half of my life has mostly been lived on the East Coast and I love how green it is out here and I spent 4 years in Hawaii and I certainly love the ocean but every time I go back to Utah like the mountains are just I'm just overwhelmed by the mountains I just love the mountains and so It was a visual treat for certain. Well, you guys have anything else to say about this before we talk about that darn Natty Gann?
I have two more things.
Okay.
Really quick. I kind of feel like the movie seems very flippant, like with the violence, but just story-wise, I just find it really, really interesting that at the beginning of the movie – Jeremiah Johnson is just very off put by any form of violence. Like he was changed in his attitudes for the worse, I think. And like by the end, he was just kind of just numb. And I think the movie's just kind of saying, it's like, look where he was at the beginning, yeah. Look where he is at the end. Just kind of like, kind of a lost soul, you know? Mm-hmm. And, one of the last things Del Gue says to him when he asks where Del Gue is headed, he goes, where are you headed? And Del Gue says, same place you are, hell in the end. So it's just kind of like, I kind of feel like these mountain men lose their souls in the mountains because like what they're doing just isn't really conducive to good soul fulfillment, yeah. You know, because nature is great and everything, but yeah. Like what you do there, where it's like, okay, I have to take from these other people and I have to take from animals. And that's like what their job is.
Yeah.
And so, it doesn't lead to good things.
And we've talked before about like there's other movies that have represented like being alone is just really unhealthy, right? And which yeah. is why none of these people are really alone in any of these movies for very long.
Yeah.
But like the Omega Man, right? Like how he lives next to the skin eaters all this time because it's better to be near your enemy than it is to be alone. And as soon as he meets another human being, then he's off to the woods, right? He, but like just the thought of being alone and when he is alone in Omega Man, he is going crazy, right? And so I think you make a very good point, right, that he's not just lost in the woods, but he's kind of lost in himself. And also a point, I think what I learned from this is what a bad idea it is to have a family, because if they get massacred, well, you know, you're probably going to end up turning into a killer yourself as you revenge all over the woods. So.
Yes,
and massacre seems pretty likely, apparently, right? I mean,
yeah, it's very. In my notes, the last note I took on this movie, I wrote, "See, nature turns men into killers," and then it looks like Katie got a hold of my notes and she wrote in her own note that says, "Stop it." She did not want me to say that.
But you said it. You got it in.
I got it in. Yeah.
So this is kind of a – what do you guys think of Sidney Pollack as a director?
So what are his films? What is he famous
12
for?
Angry Men?
12 Angry Men. He might be – he's an actor in that. He might also be the director. He is the director of that too, right?
Yeah.
He did Tootsie.
Oh, he did Tootsie. Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
Who am I confusing him with? Who's the person who did Rosemary's Baby and Tenant?
That is Cassavetes, right? No. Rosemary's Baby is the guy Polanski.
Polanski, yeah. Polanski,
okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Polanski, we don't talk about him anymore.
No.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right? And then also what he did after that. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, what happened there is terrible. And what he did after that is also terrible. Mm. But that was Polanski, not Sidney Pollack, yeah.
Okay.
I'm assuming these are common knowledge that aren't, right? Like,
yeah. I haven't seen Tootsie in a really long time, but I like 12 Angry Men. I'm assuming we're talking about the Tony Danza version, which was so successful.
Of course.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. No, okay, sorry, not 12 Angry
Men. Who is the boss?
Okay.
Maybe I've got an episode of Community.
Yeah.
I love that episode of Community. I have Sidney Pollack opened up. Just in general, let's see. They shoot horses, don't they? I don't know.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Johnson, yes. The Way We Were, I haven't seen it, but I've seen part of it. Barbara Streisand seems great in it. The Yakuza.
Sabrina.
Oh, interesting. The 1995 Sabrina.
Oh, that was him.
Sidney Pollack. Yeah. Yeah. 3 Days of the Condor is great. I like that one a lot. Mm. Electric Horseman, I haven't seen. Bobby Deerfield, I haven't seen. Absence of Malice, I haven't seen. Okay, Tootsie, pretty good. Out of Africa, I did not like. We talked about it on this podcast.
Yeah.
Very boring. Yeah.
There's also another beautiful movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because my thing with him is like, he's regarded as like just a consummate, you know, a filmmaker's filmmaker. But mostly his movies kind of leave me, I'm like, wow, this is incredibly well done, and I just actually don't care that much about it.
That is 100% how we felt about Out of Africa. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Out of Africa is like the paradigm example of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most Pollack-y movie ever.
But yeah, and you would recognize him. He's an actor in a lot of things too. And yeah, it's like he's one of these people who's like had this amazing career. But I'm like, is there anybody out there if they're like, who's your favorite director? And they're like, Sidney Pollack.
Oh, man.
I don't think so. Right?
Yeah. No, totally. Havana. That's also Robert Redford. Robert Redford is in a lot of Sidney Pollack movies.
Buddies, yeah.
Yeah. And Havana was it's not considered a classic. But that was like in 1990. Okay, so interesting. Okay, so we don't like Sidney Pollack. Okay.
No, I like him. I mean, again, I like him, but it's just like I can, you know, I can take him or leave him. Like, I've really enjoyed most of the movies that he made, including this one, right? But then I'm like, you know, it's not going to be on my Desert Island CD or DVD collection. For like, kids, like, DVDs are things that we used to put, and if we're on a desert island, apparently that's how we'd get our movies.
It's like, hey, Sidney Pollack, good job, nice day's work that you put in today, but maybe, I don't know, on the way out of the office, say something profound and put that in the work, maybe. You know,
right.
Rather than just calling it a day.
You remember back in high school, we all hung out together. Uh-huh. And we used to get really obsessed, especially John, I feel like you and me, we used to get obsessed with the X96, like they do their top 96 songs, right?
Yeah.
And the thing that always blew me away about it is like everybody, you can only vote on three, which of course I would do religiously. But that meant like the number 50 song, which felt like a pretty good number 50 song. It would be like, I don't know, like the, but not like the one with the really good piano thing, like a the, sure. the lesser song.
The Dogs like, of Lust.
Yes, Dogs of Lust. And that's somebody's favorite song. And you're like, no, there's nobody. Everybody likes that song just fine. But it's nobody's favorite song.
Right. No, you have to go Uncertain Smile. Uncertain Smile is
it's incredible.
It's a classic. It's a classic. It transcends the.
There's another podcast that I occasionally listen to called The Movies That Made Me. And they frequently make the point that every movie is someone's favorite movie. Right,
like, that just blows me away. somebody's like Sabrina, the 1995 remake of Sabrina
is their favorite,
which was totally fine. But they're like, "That's my favorite movie."
Oh man! Well, all right, we've had our fun. You guys ready for Natty Gan?
All right.
Oh yeah.
That's
all right, John. I think you're up for this one, right?
No, it's you.
And... Oh, it's me. Oh, all right. Well, I was not ready for that then, but I am now. I've got a lot to say about it. So,
okay.
All right. So we begin on the streets of Chicago. It was not very promising if we're going to be alone, right? And as it's been pointed out, we're not going to be alone that much of the movie. And this, you know, the bunch of kids are coming into what looks to be a union hall. And one of the ringleaders is this scrappy, I think she's supposed to be 12, which is going to be important later with some concerns that I have about the movie. Scrappy kid, clearly has a lot of fun, hangs out with the boys, total tomboy, loves living on the streets of Chicago. Her dad is like this union guy, right? And they're like, it's the Great Depression, so none of them have jobs. And he's like rabble rousing, and they're like, they say your dad's a communist. And she's like, oh, don't you say that, right? And then they get in a fight, and then he's like, what's a communist, dad? And her dad's like, oh, I'm not a communist. But let's be clear. He was totally – there's no way he wasn't a communist, right? But that's a different story, right? So anyway, he's a rabble-rouser. Now this is going to be relevant. And also we learn, you know, he loves his daughter so much. Mm.
He loves this daughter, not his other daughter, Laura.
No, Laura – I think that's his great – I think that's his great-granddaughter, yeah. So this is Ray Wise, again, making a comeback here.
Yeah, and he loves, we just talked about Ray Wise last time. That's great.
So yeah, and he just really loves Natty Gann, and but because he's a rabble rouser, basically like we're going to give you this great job when there are no jobs, but it's in Washington, and so he can't take her with her. He doesn't even get to say goodbye because of the way they do it, because she's like having fun on the streets of Chicago. But he's going to send for her as soon as he can, of course. In the meantime, she has to stay with this horrible proprietress of their hotel that they live in, who resents Kate taking care of her, and lots of shenanigans and trouble ensues. And basically, this woman, she's debating whether or not she's going to try to run away to Washington. Everyone's like, don't do that. It's dangerous. But you can see where this is going, of course, right? But the decision is made for her when the proprietress gets angry at her for throwing rock at cops, who totally deserve the rock thrown at them. They're evicting her little friend.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. His house. But anyway, so now, you know, the proprietress is like, that's it. I'm claiming you're an abandoned child. And of course, it's right then that Saul Gann is sending the money, but it's too late. She's on the trains. She has trouble, right? Because it turns out that if you're a 12-year-old kid on trains, it's not a great idea. Thankfully, she's helped out by an older boy,
the love
Howard.
Of her life.
The love of her life. I assume his last name is Palmer, for reasons that John already mentioned.
Yeah.
But they never mention his last name. He's played by a person you may have heard of named John Cusack. And he sort of shows her the ropes, but then they get separated. She ends up befriending a wolf that she rescues from a dog fight.
Oh, so and, interestingly enough, yeah. Do you guys know how they film those dog fights?
I mean, this is pre-CGI, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it honey on collars?
No. So they're just playing, right? And then they just substituted an audio soundtrack, and if you look at their tails, that's the big tail, right?
Oh, interesting.
Their tails kind of wagging around, and the dogs are just having a good time.
So
they filmed the dogs having a good time, and then they did the audio of them prodding the dogs.
It's actually just some extras going, So she gives the dog some food. It's now her friend. So, you know, she goes on some adventures. At a certain point, the train crashes. And thankfully, she gets off just in time. Now, this is the moment. JR, this is probably when your timer actually started, right?
Yes.
Because this is the moment that she actually is alone in the woods. And again, a lot of really beautiful shots. I think here we're in Colorado. That's the vibe I got. I know that later on they say that's where the train went down to.
Yeah.
But right. You know, she meets up with a farming family and she's gonna get taken in by them, but then the dad wants to shoot her buddy. So that's not good. So they run off.
So
she eventually falls.
They thought the wolf was trying to kill the chickens, right? But I swear the wolf was trying to like protect the chickens from the coyotes. But I have no idea why that would ever be the case. Like
I agree with you on both points, and only that it's a Disney movie, right?
It could be like a fast forward domestication. Am I saying that right?
Yeah,
because you know Now, correct me. I watched a really mini Netflix documentary on dogs and about how, you know, dogs became domesticated pretty quickly, like in the early days of man. And that's how the whole man's best friend came along, because it's just like, okay, the simple giving of meat to a dog kind of made the dogs like more like conditioned to protect the human people rather than. So if this dog was on a fast track to being domesticated by Natty Gann, I think he could have had enough insight to realize, like, oh, these are people like Natty Gann, and I could be rewarded by protecting the people value.
The chickens.
Yeah.
So can I also ask, because like she keeps following him through the wilderness, but has she like made a plan? Is he going to Washington? Is she?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. Like, he's just like hanging, right? I think maybe what it is that she points in a certain direction, then he just runs in that direction.
Yeah,
because she like knows. Presumably, she knows which way is west, okay. Right? And so she's like, I'm just going to go west.
I think my favorite part is like, I'd like a ticket to Washington, please. Oh, where in Washington? I don't know.
The part with the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she finds one lumber mill. She's like, that's the one my dad's at. Because there's only one timber operation in all of Washington at the time. Right? But yeah, but eventually she falls in with this group of orphans who are like, look, your dad abandoned you, right? Which is a reasonable explanation from her perspective. Of course, we know that's not true because we see him getting, you know, he gets time off of work, which is almost impossible to do, to go search the wreckage, and he's devastated. And then when he thinks she's dead, now he's making all these reckless decisions. He's doing more and more dangerous jobs at the lumber factory, which is a better reckless decision than like drinking yourself to oblivion or other things that would have been a reasonable thing to do. So we're glad he didn't do those things. He's still a you know, upstanding father. He's a good lumberjack. He's very good at his job, apparently. Yeah. So she gets taken to this orphan. She gets caught trying to rustle a cattle, which as a fan of Greek and Hindu mythology, there's a lot of cattle rustling. I was pretty excited about that. So she gets taken into an orphanage. She escapes, reunites with Wolfie thanks to the help of a gruff but loving blacksmith.
So in the orphanage, she gets put in solitary. Like, they have a solitary cell in the orphanage, which I just thought was really weird, but
it's called the orphaniest orphan box.
You win when you get sent there. They say you're the most orphan.
Yeah, so she's helped out by Vulcan, right? Vulcan lends her a hand.
Is his name? Right. Yeah, exactly. There you go. So, yeah.
Okay. Exactly, are we right. Are we bringing back the Odyssey reference award? Is that what you're trying to do?
Oh. This would win it. Yeah, he's practically a Cyclops too, but he's a nice, he's a kind Cyclops. You know, so now she's on her way. She tries to take the. He gives her money to the train because he's a nice guy. But then that's when she does the one ticket to Washington. But the guy is calling. She realizes that she's going to get sent back to the orphanage. So off she goes. She hooks up again with Howard. They run away from some like Main Streeters, upstanding people who like to beat the crap out of the many shanty towns that have sprung up during the Great Depression. Now she and Howard are buddies. He's sort of showing her the ropes a lot, even more. They're traveling together. There's a budding romance, which is something I want to come back and talk about because I'm not sure how great we should feel about this. But anyway, you know, they make it to Washington, and then she's going to go find Dad. Howard's like, but I got a job in California, and I want you to come with me. But she can't because she has to stay with Dad. Mm. But they, you know, they share a cute little kiss, and then off he goes to do whatever he's doing in San Francisco. And she goes to find Dad, and, you know, almost, you know, he's going to go to this very dangerous job. She gets there right as the explosions are happening. The wolf finally says goodbye now that she's going to be reunited. What happened in the explosion? Is her dad going to be with her or not? And, you know, of course, at the end, she sees her dad in this hospital truck. She's like, oh, no. But then he sees her and jumps out, and they hug. And that was the journey of Patty Gann.
They hug in front of the forest that he clear-cut, like, completely.
Yes.
which I thought was an interesting visual choice. Like, look at all the trees I cut down for you, Natty. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about it immediately.
Yes.
Meredith Salinger is 15 years old in this movie, and John Cusack is 19.
Right.
So it's a four-year gap, but it's still pretty...
That's the big gap. Those are the big gaps. I kind of felt like she was kind of closer to 12 years old.
Her character plays younger than that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So she's supposed to be 12. The actress is 15. John Cusack is 19. Who knows? I took the kid that he was supposed to be playing as around like 16 or 17, right? So it's still like a four-year gap, but who knows? But the point is he's definitely a little older, and she's definitely a kid.
Yeah. And after their kiss, she's like writing the letter that she's going to send him.
Yeah.
I there was a conversation I had with somebody, you know, several years ago where I'm like – we were all reminiscing, like, you remember that movie, The Journey of Natty Gann? You remember that? And she's like, yeah, I haven't seen that in 20 years. And I was ridiculed because I was like, that kiss at the end, that was a bit open mouth, right? That was a bit – that wasn't right? And everyone ridiculed me. They're like, no, it was an innocent kiss. It was an innocent kiss. And so I watched it carefully this time, and it was one of those kisses, those movie kisses where you see the back of someone's head. But I felt – It was a passionate kiss.
It's supposed to be – it's romantic, right? Like
– Yeah.
And you – go ahead.
There was no taking advantage, right? It was mutual. It was a mutual kiss. Right.
No, I mean she's the one that like basically said, come here, you know, before you go. But so I think it's a weird touch, and I know that the director for this movie was Roman Polanski. So But so it's weird because we watched that Charles Bronson movie that you liked so much, John.
Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law, where like there's that moment where it's like, oh, please don't kiss that girl who's 40 years younger than you. And in this one, I had the same thought. I'm like, oh, please don't kiss. And then they did. And it was it's not that he was like super old. She was just way too young for – anyway.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And again, like it's like the Great Depression. I get it. Whatever. If you imagine them as two teenagers, it's fine. But like, there's some gaps there that seem a little weird. And there's another scene where I saw things described as a G-rated attempted rape.
Oh yeah, the attempted rape.
That's a weird thing, right? Like, I don't think that can ever be G-rated. Now, granted, this is a Disney movie, but there's she's a hitchhiker at one point, and she gets taken in by a middle-aged man who tries to take advantage of her, and Wolf saves the day.
Yeah. Well,
but again, like this is not – that's a real thing that really happens. Let's be clear, right? But it was definitely a jarring moment in a kid's movie.
So the thing, though, is that he wanted to buy her wolf and she said no. So it's kind of her fault. you know, sure. for not selling the wall.
It was like surf and turf, right? Yeah. Or halter top.
Yeah.
But the, okay, but let me go back to the John Cusack thing. I think it does seem a little off to me because I think it's played as innocent, but it just doesn't seem as innocent because it feels like some weird Disney executive was like, let's give the little girls what they want. They can have this, like, because it's a Disney movie, like a Prince Charming kind of thing. Like a Prince Charming
John
kiss.
Cusack would have been he would have been an A-list leading man at this. This is like 87, 86?
85.
85. So is that pre Better Off Dead?
Oh, that's
Better
a good question.
I think it's the same year.
Okay. So
yeah.
they got a deal then. Little did they know they're about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. The year before this, he was in 16 Candles.
But he's pretty minor in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Better Off Dead was released before The Journey of Natty Gam, but it's the same year.
Okay.
And then he was in Stand By Me. I forgot that he was in Stand By Me.
Oh yeah. He wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's been a minute. So I guess this was not yet at the height of his fame, but he was is an up-and-comer. Yeah. So yeah, maybe
well, this
it was
is the movie
I don't
that launched
understand.
Him. the startup.
Him and Ray Wise.
Yeah. So
not Meredith Salinger. What happened to her?
Well, it's weird because like she was in like this and a couple really crappy movies. But then she's been like on a lot of TV. She's done a ton of TV work, but she was in Dream a Little Dream.
Yeah.
And she could not rescue that film.
I've not seen that.
Don't
you should see it. We had to watch it.
Well, because we had to watch it, other people should have to.
Yeah, that's always been my thing.
That's,
and you know,
Dream
a Little Dream is not as bad as we say it is. We just always talk about how bad it is. But also you watch it and you're like, oh, it is like surprisingly boring, more boring than I thought it could ever could be, you know. But okay, you guys know who Meredith Salinger is now, right?
Well, she's married to Patton Oswalt.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to label her by her marriage, then what are you saying? Who what is she now?
I'm saying I want to label her by her marriage.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it's kind of fun because I just think it's just interesting. It's not that I want to label Meredith Salinger by her marriage, but I just, it's interesting because Patton Oswalt's other wife is the wife who caught the Bay Area murder person who wrote the book on the Bay Area murder guy that pretty much got him found. Huh. After like a 30-year cold case, and then she died tragically of cancer, and then Patton Oswalt marries Natty Gann. I just think that's just an incredible story to me. I don't know if it's a good or a bad story, but it's just full of ups and downs.
It's
and
just a story.
I find it exciting.
Some stories are just stories.
Yeah.
So one of my takeaways from this movie, by the way, was that being an orphan in the Great Depression looked awesome.
Well, they had
like
they
so
had three piece
fun,
suits,
like,
didn't they?
Yeah. Like, when she's hanging out with the dude, like the vendor, like helping him like jack up the price of the pot holders or the pots or whatever. Like,
yeah,
that, it just looked fun.
There's your other shining moment, by the way. That's a
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
You use that shin of yours. Yeah, and he's like, "Don't ride the rails, just hang out with me." But of course, she can't do that because. The mean old proprietress. But yeah, like other than the fact that like eventually she had to like she was going to go to jail or and get into juvie, it seemed pretty sweet to be a urchin on the streets of Chicago.
Yeah, and riding the rails really because like you said, her future was she was going to go to jail, right? So, I mean, she had quite an adventure. I mean, she had a journey.
Yeah, so. It was quite a journey.
Yeah,
she survived a train derailing. She hung out with hobos.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask about. So I guess there were just like people during this period who just sat at home and just got so angry at the thought that there were poor people who couldn't afford to live in a home and so they had built like shelters nearby and they're like it makes me so angry those poor people let's go burn down their village.
And I think that really did happen. Yeah, it's like
there's no internet back then.
Right, so there's no way to know. But no, I mean, like, I don't think that – one of the things that I think we are not taught enough in school – and this is why I said, like, he was a communist, which I'm fine with, but I know not everyone is necessarily going to be – is, like, America in the 30s was there was serious unrest, which of course we know, but I don't think like we were very close to, you know, there was a serious fascist movement funded by some, well, you know, some tycoons who didn't want FDR, who was not a communist, right? Who was a pretty, you know, pretty not even a socialist, probably saved capitalism in the United States. But yeah, I mean, like, there was a serious communist movement, there was a serious fascist movement, and there was like serious violence and unrest that we often just paper over in the stories. Yeah.
So I was definitely wondering this. I was totally wondering this. The thugs who were going around just hurting the shanty towns, were they the
Pinkertons?
Were they spurred on just because, just was it just straight up fascism? It's like, okay, you know, we have to eliminate people we don't deem as great as we are. Was that all it was?
So Howard called them Main Streeters, right? And that definitely did happen. I mean, there was definitely groups that like went in and harassed. And a lot of times, I mean, you know, there was a strong fascist movement in America in the late 30s. You know, the Madison Square Garden got filled up by people. And the name of the movement was something like, literally, like, not Make America Great Again. I'm not trying to go there, but something incredibly close to that.
Wasn't
right?
it America First?
America First, yes, that's what it was, right? And they had, like, they filled up Madison Square Garden, right? And these were people who, yeah, they were like, they would start riots, you know, that all happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, was it like Main Streeters with people edged on? More common, I think, was Pinkerton violence, right? So there's a lot of union. This is, again, like, Saul would have been, and to be clear, a guy like Saul was probably engaging in his share of violence too. It's just I'm more sympathetic to that violence. But you know, the Pinkertons were you know, essentially a privatized police force whose job it was to go beat up union people to keep down the price of and now I think there's a movie being made about them, like a Jungle Cruise movie starring like The Rock and I want to say like Charlize Theron or something. So that'll be fun.
Is it like a Jungle Cruise movie? Because The Rock was in the Jungle Cruise movie.
I think it's an adventure because the Pinkertons would eventually – like they also set up a lot of the Banana Republics in you know, they would like get hired to like do coups in Central American stuff because that's a fun thing to do. And I think that it's – but this one's going to be like a fun like adventure. Like
it's like a fun family romp about killing homeless people and burning down their villages.
Well, it's going to be more like they're going to like treasure hunt or something, I think, right? But yeah, it's going to be fun. And again, bear in mind that I have – pretty pro labor views, and not everyone does. Other people might tell you that the Pinkertons are much nicer than I say they are. But yeah, but the short story is yes, there was totally random violence, low level, you know, wealthy people against poor people against wealthy people, or against, you know, labor against organized factories and such. Yeah, I mean, that stuff definitely happened.
There's all
cops and stuff too, though, but.
I'm ashamed to say this, but I got my car loan through America First Credit Union.
I hear they have great rates as long as you meet their terms, which are not necessarily legal. But
yeah, I think it kind of all worked out, but you know, that's my secret shame.
All right. Well, do you want to exercise that shame by talking about Timothy Treadwell?
Timothy Treadwell in the movie Grizzly Man. Interesting story. It begins at the tryouts for a little sitcom known as Cheers.
Oh yeah.
Oh, this is a documentary, so everything I say is absolutely true. Timothy Treadwell was second to Woody Harrelson in getting the role of Woody in Cheers, and he didn't get it, and that sent him on a spiral, which included his enrolling into conversion therapy, in which he tried really hard to become gay, but it did not take. And he got a cute little lad haircut, did a lot of surfing.
Prince Valiant.
Yeah.
They always called it.
Yes. Prince Valiant. Accent.
Yeah.
But anyway, this movie's all about this guy, Timothy Treadwell. He's a very interesting person. I'll probably just say this right now. I don't think I would have gotten along with him really very well in social situations. He's pretty intense. He's got a lot. He's got a high energy, and it kind of makes me uncomfortable. But Timothy Treadwell eventually he went and lived with bears. That was his life. His whole life was bears.
That astonished me. 13 years. He survived 13 summers.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, okay, because we see all the footage of him interacting with bears, and he was apparently a bear expert, but the way you see him...
I don't know. I don't think he was an expert at all.
Well, he was regarded as an expert. Him interact with bears, you're kind of like, I don't think any bear would want to be treated this way. So it's pretty much a ticking... It's a ticking clock. It's a ticking clock, like waiting to see. But he has all this footage. He wants to be a filmmaker. You know, he finds his documentary footage of bears and his research of bears and what he thinks of bears and his knowledge of bears and his – and he wants to tell the world, you know, how bears think and act and work. And also you get a sense that he has no idea how bears think.
Oh, no, 100%. And it's also wonderful that while filming the bears, he also occasionally films action sequence scenes of himself. Like he's making his own action movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Like running down a trail with like a hatchet in hand. Yeah. You know?
So here's what the movie's missing, because they mentioned so many times in this movie that he acted like a bear. And I needed the footage of him like pretending to be a bear, and we never see it, but apparently like several people are like, yeah, he basically wanted to be a bear and would always act like a bear. We don't really see it.
Yeah. That's weird that we don't see that. There is, another mass. Okay. Well, let's just skip to the end. Anyway, he gets killed by a bear. that's not a spoiler so much. That's not how the movie ends, because the movie starts with that. We know he was killed by a bear, and now let's just watch the footage. Let's watch his attitude. Let's watch his action. And it's so interesting because, you know, I don't want to call him crazy, but, you know, I mean, he's so much different than I am. He talks a lot about his personal struggles. At one point, and I kind of noticed this when I was just kind of looking over my notes just now, he said bears saved him from the drink. Like, he would have been an alcoholic if he wasn't just really, really, really into bears. And I think that, like, really tracks with, if you are addicted to something, a lot of times you don't overcome that addiction unless you replace it with a different addiction.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the case here. And so his new addiction was this obsession with bears, and And as part of that, in the big tragedy, all his girlfriends that, you know, we meet, they hung out with him during these very dangerous bear things.
They're all terrified. Like
he's speaking in bear to these bears, but those bears are like, that brother, that's not how you speak bear, man. I also think, you know, one really, like, what it came down to is I think he just overextended his stay. You know, kind of like, you know, he was a dinner guest. He stayed in bear country well deep into the autumn, which is when he eventually got killed. And I think it was just pretty much just like the bear was just like, OK, you know what? I'm through being polite. It's pretty much how I read it. Like, it was just breakdown. Yeah. Of propriety between him and the bears. The bears were like, okay, you know what? Been nice, but you're just not even leaving. And so
it's interesting, right? Because the bear that killed him is not like it's not one of the bears that he's used to spending time with, right? Because he did stay really late in the season. So I think the way that they want you to understand is that the bear that killed him was not a bear that was familiar with him. Also, the other bears were already hibernating. So this bear wasn't hibernating because it hadn't eaten enough. And now the food supply is gone. So you have a bear that doesn't, that's not comfortable around him, that is starving, and so it's going to eat him, right? And so maybe if he had just stuck to his normal schedule, this would have kept working out, because it does seem like those bears that he spent 13 years with kind of acclimated to him. And like you said,
like,
he
was their friend. He's like, oh, you just got to get used to him, you know? Like, they said that to their bear friends. Like, oh, he's pretty intense, but you get used to him.
You'll get used to him, yeah. What do you guys think of Timothy? I think he's well-meaning, and I think this is something that is filling a huge hole in his life, and I understand that. But I also think that he's way misguided. Every single expert they talked to in this film, they all agreed that he wasn't – it's not just that he wasn't helping the bears, but it was being harmful, right? by making it so the bears felt more comfortable around humans, it was going to increase human-bear interactions, and then that leads to just more human and bear death, right? And so also he kept saying, like, he's there to defend the bears or to protect the bears, but they kind of made the point that bear poaching isn't really a problem in Alaska. And also, you don't really see him defend any bears in any way whatsoever throughout the film, other than to be there and secretly film the humans who occasionally show up.
The quote-unquote poachers who were just – were they threatening him?
That's weird because he made it feel like that, right? Like, they left the note that said, see you next year, and maybe that was like – hey, see you next year, right?
But he's like, they were like, why is this guy filming us while we're sitting here in our craft? Like,
they can't see me. I'm filming him. And they're like, we see you, Timothy. Just stand up already, okay? So now, John and I talked about this before, and it's going to be hard to walk a fine line here because it's really, really tragic what happened to him. There's some good, there's a lot of humor to be had here too.
Well, and also, I mean, like, you know, you mentioned the joke earlier about having it coming, but like, and this is like, I mean, Herzog as a documentarian makes it like, he has people saying he had this coming, right?
Yeah. One of the guys, not a helicopter rescue guy, but one of the guys is like, he deserved it, right?
Yeah, that was the most harsh, but.
Well, and then also there was the letter about how he got eaten because Dems and Libs are bear food or whatever, right?
I guess he was from California. I guess he was a Dem and Lib. I mean, he was just a weirdo, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that I loved, Herzog clearly seems to fall on the side of like he – whether or not he deserved it, he was asking for it, right, is I think what's Herzog – comes down to.
Like, if you walk a tightrope, you don't deserve to fall.
But you're walking a tightrope. Yeah. And it's just not that he deserved it, but that there was just no way this wasn't going to happen. And I think Herzog completely disagrees with Timothy's view of how this is supposed to work, right?
It's crazy that the subject of this movie and the director of this movie have like diametrically opposing views on just what nature is, just like the definition of nature. Yeah.
And so, not only the subject, but in some ways the co-creator, right? Because Herzog is just – a lot of the footage is Treadwell's own footage.
Yeah, yeah.
And Herzog even says, he's like, this is really – he's not just sort of reading him as somebody like on his way to getting killed by bears. He's like treating him seriously as a film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A kind of weirdly incompetent but kind of in his own way genius filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
You remember the scene where the coroner is like going over all the details? And it was so weird, and like there's like the stilted thing, and he was like I don't know if this is a cheeky sense of humor or what, but I kind of think that was Werner Herzog recreating like a Timothy Treadwell directed sequence. where he was like standing in a certain place. It's like it's as if the coroner set up the camera himself and was standing, and he was just like a little bit off on his cues and stuff, and it was like cutting rapidly between different poses that he was doing.
I don't know.
I'll have to check that again. I don't remember that. I do remember most of what he was describing, which was horrific.
The coroner stuff was so awful, and like some of the stuff they revealed, they killed the bear and they retrieved 4 garbage bags of human from the bear, which is so
and clothing.
Oh, so gross. And I don't know how I'd feel about being that girl that got the watch, right?
Yeah.
So
it still ticks.
Oh, and then just watching.
She seemed touched.
Watching Werner like listen to the audio and then describe the audio. It just sounds awful.
I'm fascinated by that because like, okay, you're a filmmaker, you're trying to sell a movie. And I mean, when you have an asset like that, it's like, okay, here's audio of the actual subject, you know, because the subject is Timothy Treadwell, of course, but the real bullseye of a subject is the death of Timothy Treadwell. And to have actual footage of the death and like listen to it and like and be on camera and say, okay, this needs to be destroyed right now. I don't know what a weird filmmaking move to do, but it also kind of casts like I don't know how bad the audio is, but maybe it kind of makes it worse it kind of makes it more legendary. It's like, okay, we can't, no one can hear this. Please destroy this.
It's so bad that you can't even, yeah.
It's just the Amityville Horror opening is all it is, actually. But I did notice when I started to search Timothy Treadwell on Google, one of the things that popped up was Timothy Treadwell audio death, which means, now again, I want to be clear, I did not do that search, but that means that it's a frequent enough search that Google's like,
people are looking for it.
People are looking for it, which is its own weirdness, right? I mean,
is it possible Jewel sold that?
I really doubt it. I would be stunned.
That's awful, isn't it? I mean, he's got some serious guts, right? Like, there's some of those shots where the bears come right up next to him, and he's like, bad bear, right? And he just scolds them, and they just walk off. I can't believe he didn't get killed, like, in year one.
Didn't get mauled. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we focus on the fact that he died in year 14, but that's 13 successful years.
Yeah. Oh, and it's also, like, he was so obsessed with decapitations. He was so convinced that he would be decapitated, right? He brought it up so many times. But he knew he would die doing this. But would he be disappointed to learn that he wasn't actually decapitated? According to the coroner, the head was still attached to the spine. So.
But part of it was removed, if I recall correctly. So that's, you know, it's something.
Yeah, well, I guess missing half of his scalp that was chewed off or...
I mean, there's a lot of weird, I mean, yeah, so, you know, he stayed up late this time. His girlfriend didn't want to, right? Amy was her name, Amy,
starts with an H, it was like...
We should give her a name Huguenot? Of her own, we shouldn't just call her the girlfriend. Yes, Amy Huguenot, didn't want to stay up, in fact, talked about leaving him, which I would encourage her to do that. Huguenard.
There's that one shot of her, like, a day before they were killed, where, like, she's... Like she's between the camera and the bear, and she just looks terrified.
Understandably. Oh, man.
Well, okay. I think certainly she wanted to leave. I'm not sure. Did she have – she couldn't just leave, though. I mean, did they
she
have –
She could have when they – I mean, I think they had a radio or something. She could have – there was the guy who would pick him up, and they said they were going to stay late. So she could have gone then.
Okay.
Yeah. And
I don't think she'd be like, I'm leaving right
like
now.
Their tent, no, right? Like, so Timothy points out that their tent is pitched in a really bad spot as far as safety, right? Because you should be out in the open so the bears aren't surprised by you and you're not surprised by them. So, I mean, they were literally doing everything wrong in that situation. Anyway, it's super tragic that this happened, and it sounds like whatever issues he had, you know, this was kind of his thing. And so I sort of don't feel bad for him. I kind of feel like maybe this is how he would have wanted to go. And that's what he indicates throughout the film. And then he did get to live 13 years with these bears. That must have been pretty amazing. So I don't know.
I mean, yeah. You know, you guys mentioned this a little bit, the fact that he's filming his own action movies. There's this other sense, right, where it's like he wants to see himself like, so first of all, I don't remember, they imply that he's kind of like a celebrity. I have no memory from prior to this movie, but
well,
you know,
yeah. I can't remember when he did all this action, but I didn't hear about him until, I don't even remember hearing about his death. I just, the first time I heard about this was when the movie came out.
Yeah.
So the movie comes out in 2005. He dies in 2003.
Yeah.
And it implies that he's a celebrity in like the late 90s and early 2000s. Which is a time that I would have presumably, and maybe I did hear about him and I was like, that guy sounds weird and awful. And so I just ignored it like I do with a lot of celebrities, but I don't remember it at all. Yeah. Until this movie came out.
I mean, it would have been, I don't know. It would have been like, is your school out of lesson materials enough that they would invite him to the assembly?
And it's free.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, and he was like the last guest on Carson or something, you know, that no one.
Right.
So, I mean, celebrity in that way, right?
Yeah, so a self-billed expert who was getting on national shows as an expert in raising racial bear awareness, but the actual experts were like, "Oh, please don't,
please stop."
Like, nothing that you're saying is right.
Well, I mean, like this guy killed himself; like he committed suicide publicly for 13 years.
Right. Courted death.
Is that – okay, it's easy for us to talk and it's easy for us to make light of now. But, I mean, what is – were we supposed to do something? Like was were the experts, were other people, like, who was supposed to do something, like, to prevent him from doing this? Or is can anything be done because he was
making his
own decision, you know?
His surfer buddy, like, it seems like people loved him, right? Like, he had a surfer buddy who's like, oh, yeah, sure, everything you told us was a lie. You pretended to be Australian. He was, like, a middle-class kid from Long Island, but he pretended to be Australian and had an accent that, like, was just bizarre. And the way he talks in the movie is very affected, too, right? In his own footage. It's not Australian or quasi-Australian, but it's weird. Like, he's got an intentionally weird way of talking. But he loved him. And, like, there were, like, all these women who clearly were in love with him, right? Like, and he had romantic relationships with a bunch of, you know, then they would, like, store his stuff. They probably helped him out financially, one imagines. So, like, people seem to love him. But, like, yeah, I mean, I'm with you, John. He struck me as just insufferable.
Yeah.
No, it was like if you were at a party with him, or even worse, if like sitting around a campfire with him, he's the guy that would make you like, okay, I think I'm head to bed. You guys stay.
I'm done. Yeah.
So. Oh man. So this it's such a tragic story, but it's all like 100% his doing, right?
Yes. Yeah. And his parents, like, you could tell his parents knew that. Like, they're like, well, he loved bears, but, like, you know. And also, yeah, he wanted to be an actor, so he was also – so that's the thing I love about the footage is, like, Herzog is also looking at it. He's like, oh, there's the moment where he says he stops being a filmmaker and becomes a performer. And you can tell that in Herzog's mind that is just, like, he has nothing but disgust for him after that point.
Yeah. Well, that's – I think that might be the best insight, like – He decided, like, he was performing this whole time. Like, his whole life was performing as someone who knew everything about bears and who was so confident in that knowledge that even the bears somehow believed him, even though it's not correct.
That's a good way to think about it, actually. I like that, yeah.
Let me ask you a question. There's a part where it mentions towards the end that he was, like, fighting with the park rangers. Did you take that as he yelled at them and opposed them, or did you get the impression that he physically assaulted some park rangers?
So I think that one thing that Herzog is referring to is he tried to dox them, right? So in that rant that he gives on to camera, which remember he was releasing his tapes to people, this one he never did because he died, but like, you know, I don't know if it was put on the internet or what, but like he was releasing these tapes and he like was like, you know, bad mouthing these guys and apparently just was like releasing personal details about them and saying that they're like the enemies of the bears. Did he also personally assault them? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, to your question, I can't remember which one you said, like, who should we have tried to stop him? Like, I think his family should have, but clearly didn't, or his friends should have, but didn't. But it sounds like that the park rangers were. It's just that he was breaking the law, and it's a huge area, so it's, like, kind of hard to, like, stop him. But, you know, they made that – the law about not camping for the same place for more than 5 days – I read online it was known as the Tim Treadwell rule because it was specifically to get him to stop – and he was also – I like when Herzog goes, he would also violate the very sensible rule to stay more than however many feet from the bears, right? Like,
So on Twitter, I follow the National Park Service, and they occasionally like will put out the same tweet that they always do. And it's like, this is how to enjoy wildlife. And it says like the distance from animals. And I want to say bears, it's like 100 yards. Please stay 100 yards away from a bear.
Yeah, I mean minimally. Yeah. I mean, you know, we grew up doing a lot of camping and like bear – like. You can like, always tell people who have been camping versus people who haven't, like, how seriously do you take bear safety? Like, I think some people laugh, like, but no, like, if you're camping in the woods, like, bear safety is a serious issue.
Oh, man,
and
yeah.
Anyone who spends any time in the woods knows this, right? Like, I was not, like, an outdoors person by any means, but just, like, this is a thing you learn very early on. And if you ever encounter bears, which I never have close, but, like, there's a reason for it, right? Like,
yeah. So yeah, my dad and I and my brother Ben, we did a trip to Alaska when I was still in high school, and we flew into this cabin on a lake, and it was so cool. And we went to go salmon fishing, and we got about 100 yards away from the hole we were going to fish, and we, like, just saw, like, a bear's head above the grass or whatever near where we wanted to fish. And it kind of just poked its head up and it looked at us. And then the guy took out his gun and shot it in the air to try and scare the bear off. And then all of a sudden, the three grizzlies just stood up, looked at us, and then they started walking to the sides, and I felt like we're being flanked. And so we didn't go fishing that day.
Yeah, so, bears love salmon, so oh, yeah. If you guys just offered to share it, it would have been fine, I'm sure.
Oh, man. Anyway, I honestly, I still really don't know what to make of this movie. I don't know what to think of even why it was made, or I don't know. This is it's something else. This is a different thing.
Yeah, it's a fun movie.
It's very odd. It's kind of like, I mean, part of me is like, Werner Herzog is saying something really incredible about the human condition and our relationship with nature. And then another part of me is like, Werner Herzog came across a bunch of already footage and he made it in a weekend, you know, like, and like, not much trying.
It's not like a universal message either. It's like, it's a story about someone who was so outside the pale and was doing their own thing and wasn't really doing the right thing. And I don't know, it's an interesting choice for a movie, but like you said, like the footage was there and it is compelling. I mean, it's a really compelling story, even though it's like a Columbo episode. We know how it's going to end, right? Because we know how it started. So, but anyway.
I just saw on Twitter yesterday, a tweet, there's something like, ah, oh, man, this detective is so dumb. I'm going to get away with this murder for sure. He just has one more question for me and he's going to let me go. And that was sort of, I mean, to a certain degree, that's them like that, you know, the bear just had one more question for Treadwell.
Yeah.
He had made it through all the other days. But at the end, the bear got him, yeah. I mean, do you guys like Herzog in general? Or I love Herzog, but...
I love Herzog. I like Herzog's movies. I love just hearing Herzog say words.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. But yeah, I mean, you often get that sense of those movies, right? It's like it's going to be about one thing, but then it's also about something else. To a certain degree, this one wasn't. I mean, this one is going to be about the fact that there's this guy who thinks that he's wild and who wants to be wild, but can't be, right? And that's what it's about.
Oh, he did Aguirre, The Wrath of God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
He did Fitzcarraldo. Yeah, he did
movies.
The 1970s Nosferatu with Klaus Kinski.
Didn't he do Das Boot also, or am I making that up?
You're making that up.
I'm not seeing
that. Okay. That's Wolfgang Peterson, the Neverending Story guy. Right. Yeah.
He also did Neverending Story.
But, you know, you got
the story never ends.
That seems like a perfect Werner Herzog movie, Neverending Story. our relationship with nature is an eternal agony.
the demon dragon Falkor.
Little did he know that he was the one who would destroy the land of Fantasia. Yeah.
All right. Well, we picked some good movies this time. Our average was 93% on the good old Rotten Tomato meter.
Oh, wow.
The lowest being The Journey of Natty Gannett, the 91%. So
91. Good job, Natty Gannett. Pretty good.
And still, if you even care about IMDb rankings, Grizzly Man is on top with 7.8.
Ooh.
That's out of what?
10? 10, I guess. I've never seen a 10. I think a 10 would be impossible.
I think 8.4 is the highest I've ever seen on IMDb rankings, yeah.
So they're a hard grader.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just fan.
It's just everybody. Right? It's
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Populism works.
All right. So before, let's see. I guess should we? Oh, that's right. We're gonna go to commercial break. Before we do, I want to tell you before we start all of our rankings that you guys on the Facebook page overwhelmingly decided that The Journey of Natty Gannett was the best of these three movies, but we'll decide that ourselves. Okay. All right.
Is that because that's what people have seen?
I think that may be part of it.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
I mean, I guess that's part of it, but also I wouldn't have thought it because, I mean, it's very – like you have to be exactly our age, I would think. You had to have seen Journey of Natty Gannett on Disney Channel repeats on cable in 1986,
1987. I saw it at the Baldwin Library when I still lived in Michigan for the kids' summer movie program.
I'm probably lying. Wow. But I want to believe that I saw it in the movie theater. But again, that's probably a lie. It seems like the kind of movie my dad would take me to.
It seems like I'm glad you guys confirmed that it was actually a cinematic release, because I kind of assumed it was a Disney Channel only release. It was just like one of those made for Disney Channel movies.
The library Cinema Club, I'm not sure that counts as a cinematic release.
It sounds like a good club.
All right, well, let's here we go. Let's hear from our sponsor.
Okay, commercial break time. Everybody go to yoursmindtheirspodcast.blogspot.com to find all of our old podcasts. You can do direct MP3 downloads. And also go to yoursmindtheirspodcast@gmail.com. That's our email. We will read your email. If you like, you can send us a voicemail at 801-896-4542. 801-896-4542. We will not answer the phone. You can just leave a voicemail. Tell us we're right. Tell us we're wrong. We'd love to hear how we're wrong. We'd love it. We don't get enough. And let's see. Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars and leave us a review. Would mean a great deal to us. And go to the Facebook page. Just search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs on Facebook. It should pop right up. And that's where you can vote in the polls, decide which movie genres we watch, decide which specific movies we watch. There's a lot of power you have. You're going to be one of only maybe 10 other people, so your vote has tremendous power there. So totally go ahead and do that. Let's see. What did I forget? Did I get out? Is that all their contact information?
Think so. We got nothing in the email again.
Just checking the email. Okay. Yeah, check the email. All right. See, this could be you next time. Next time we check our email.
I'll send one right now.
Oh, thank you, Evan.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do some awards, huh?
Awards. Okay.
Good.
All right. All right.
Pull up my list here.
All right, Evan, let's start with you. Which movie has the best title?
I mean, I liked all these movies. The titles were all kind of stinkers.
Yeah.
So I think The Journey of Natty Gann wins by default, and that's the only thing that's not just what the movie is.
Yes, right. I totally agree.
I agree.
The Journey of goes a very long way to adding color to the story.
Okay. Best movie poster, John.
You know what? I'm going to, you know how I usually love color and darkness and, you know, not white. I'm going to go with Jeremiah Johnson because, you know, just him in the middle of a white, just the whiteness, it kind of emphasizes his loneliness.
And his whiteness.
And his whiteness.
But I do agree with you. What do you think, Ammon?
Yeah, it's 3 for 3 here. I think that was it was visually striking. I can imagine myself wearing my bell bottoms in the early 70s and being like, oh, Robert Redford, that is Sundance Kid Boy. It looks like a good movie, and I'd go see it for sure.
All right, Ammon, give us your favorite tagline and then your 3 alternates.
Okay, we went down there. I scroll down there. I wasn't quite there yet. I'm still going with Jeremiah Johnson. I didn't love any of these taglines, but this one was the best. Some say he's dead. Some say he never will die.
Oh, that's me.
Who says that? obviously, it was filmed. It took place in the 1860s. He's dead. Anyways.
All right, you can go ahead and give your alternates, and then we'll come back.
Oh, my alternates. Okay, Jeremiah Johnson. One man learns he shouldn't have bothered shaving. We did not talk about that scene. But his lady friend apparently doesn't like his beard. That's like they can't communicate, but she communicates that, so he shaves, but then she gets killed anyway.
Which is related.
Yeah. Which is related, yes. Yeah. Journey of Natty Gann. A heartwarming tale, as long as you ignore certain age differences. And Grizzly Man. I'm going to come back to this one. I forgot. I actually thought I'd written one down, but I didn't. But I have one that's close to it, so I'll come back. You guys go, and I'll give myself a Grizzly Man. Okay. Anyway, sorry.
All right, John, what do you got?
Okay. I agree. The best tagline is – okay, but I read it differently. Some say he's dead. Some say he never will be, is how I read it. Like, will be, not never will die.
Oh.
Which,
yeah.
Okay, will die makes way more sense because it's like some say he's dead, some say he never will exist, which I think I think he existed.
No.
But I don't know.
But you are right. The tagline is never will be, but I took that to be never will be dead. But yeah, so, yeah. But you are right. That's what it said. Yeah.
I think it just, it could be sort of just wordily confusing there. Okay. So my tagline for Jeremiah Johnson is, he lives on the mountain and he lives on liver. My Natty Gann tagline is, she miraculously crossed an entire nation, but don't celebrate yet. It's still the middle of the Great Depression, which actually kind of leads me to believe. I did want to ask that. I feel like she and her dad are still in a very bad place at the end of the movie. So
yeah, he missed the train up to Alaska to go chop down other trees. Cause the ones in, Seattle are now, they're gone now.
Because in a fit of desperation of not knowing where his daughter is, he cut down every tree in Washington. and it totally visualized that way too. Okay, the Grizzly Man tagline: human society turned its back on him. Turns out Bear Society weren't big fans of him either.
Oh, all right. So best tagline. I picked the same one. So we're 3 for 3 so far. All samesies. My alternates. Jeremiah Johnson, and I'm kind of inspired here by a quote that Weird Al Yankovic made when UHF came out on DVD. But anyway, the movie that will lead to the world's most famous GIF, a word that won't exist for another 40 years. And I imagine that's what the poster said 40 years ago. The Journey of Natty Gann, see how the hobo half live. Oh boy. And Grizzly Man. Das Grizz mag u es du essen, which just means the grizzly like to eat you.
All right, I've got a Grizzly Man tagline now. Some people loved him, but he wasn't to everyone's taste.
Oh boy. All right, John, your favorite opening credits.
Favorite opening credits. Well, Grizzly Man has an entire overture. So I picked that.
Did you mean Jeremiah Johnson has an entire overture?
Jeremiah Johnson has an entire overture. I'm going to get Grizzly Man and Jeremiah Johnson. it seems like those are kind of interchangeable titles.
All right. What about you, Ammon? Favorite opening credits?
Same thing. I was like 6 minutes. I was like, look at this lovely scenery. Nice song. Like, just sit there and chill. And it was great.
Get my notes together. Popcorn. Just like, yeah.
This is astonishing. I now predict we are going to have the exact same award for every single award.
Yeah, I think when we get to the more specific ones, we might have. Yeah, so far.
I picked the same one. So plus also when the credits did start going, it was white titles over lovely scenery, and you had whoever the singer singing Jeremiah Johnson. So. Best titular line, Ammon. What's your favorite line where they just blurted out the name of the movie?
Every time they said Jeremiah Johnson.
All right,
John, who are you?
What do you got?
Okay, I'm going to say the very beginning of Jeremiah Johnson, the narrator who says his name was Jeremiah Johnson, and they say he wanted to be a mountain man.
Yeah, it's mine.
The story goes that he was a man of proper wit and adventurous spirits suited for the mountains. Yeah, anyway, it's just that line.
Okay, wow. Oh, that, yeah. So,
was yours too?
Like 5 for 5? This is crazy. My favorite.
Do they ever even say Grizzly Man? They say Grizzly Nation a lot because that's the name of his organization.
Yeah. Bear people.
I was thinking that. I kind of assumed they didn't say Grizzly Man.
I never caught it. I was listening.
Because I don't think anyone respected him enough to refer to him as the Grizzly Man, right?
Who is this Grizzly Man?
And I think they said the Journey of Natty Gann only once when John Cusack whispered to her, that's quite a journey. And then he turns away from her and goes, the Journey of Natty Gann. And then he cries.
A single tear rolling down his cheek.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's your favorite technology, John?
Okay. Yeah. I think you guys are going to agree with this one. And that's beaver smell. The liquid beaver smell that they pour into the beaver traps.
Oh, I didn't get that one. Okay.
Solid.
What have you got, Ammon?
Using a slop chute in order to jump on a train.
Ooh.
Like, it's improvised MacGyver technology on the spot. Yeah. Good work, John Cusack.
All right. Well, I'm going with the heated dirt bed. The so warm that you burn your biscuits. So that's pretty good.
All right.
Well, Ammon, what's your favorite name from this movie? Any of these movies?
Okay. So it's a tie. They're related. And I think they really capture two different approaches to what this movie was about. So one was Sergeant Brown, which is one of the many beautiful names that Tim gave to the bear. His bears had amazing names. There was Sergeant Brown. There was like Mr. Chocolate. There's Demon.
Demon Hatchet.
Demon Hatchet. But equally good name goes to the bear that actually killed him, Bear 141.
Bear 141. So I did choose Demon Hatchet, the bear. John, what's your favorite name?
Favorite name. Those are both better. I picked Del Gyu.
I originally had Del Gyu.
Was a good name, too. Bear Claw was also a good name. There are a lot of good names in that movie, too.
Good names.
Well, John, what's your favorite food?
In Journey of Natty Gann, when Natty Gann goes to an alley, this is when she's not in the wilderness. And she just, like, lifts up the alley goo and takes a bite out of the alley goo in the garbage can.
Oh, geez. What about you, Ammon? What's the best food?
Also Natty Gann, but not that moment. The slop at the lumber mill. Oh. When all the boys are sitting there just shoveling their food, I just, like, it looked like great, like, flapjacks and just, worked up a big appetite there on the lumber mill. So I think it was delicious.
Okay, well, I'm going with elk that they hunted, and I'm assuming they ate from Jeremiah Johnson.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that sure. Actually would have tasted good. Your guys' choices were garbage.
No, the slop would have been great. Well,
all right, Ammon, what's your favorite outfit?
Favorite outfit? Saul Gann's looking for work outfit. Like, I love that he gets dressed up, he puts on a hat, he looks sharp to go yell at the guys for not giving him a job.
Hmm. Well done. John, what about you? You have a favorite outfit?
Yeah. Honorable mention. Let's see. I have it written down as Bear 141. But actually it was when Bear 141 took a piece and said, "Look at me, I'm Davy Crockett."
See my vest.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with Jeremiah Johnson's Swan knit him a fur jacket where rain can't get through neither.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a really,
really nice
jacket. Yeah.
Okay.
So for outfit, I have an honorable mention where Timothy Treadwell wore a garbage bag pretty well. at least his remains did. It wore a garbage bag. But that's how about the Jeremiah Johnson GIF jacket, which I don't think it's the one that she made him. But it's kind of the plaid one that he wears throughout.
Oh, also, sure. You know. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, best alien. By the way, it's Timothy Treadwell.
Yeah.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, well, yeah, I just in a complete – like he was – the bears were more alien than Timothy Treadwell.
Yeah, I don't know which one you're going with, John, because I have bears as understood by Werner Herzog, because he's got that brilliant moment when he says,
"Oh yeah,
in all the footage, I never once saw a glimmer of understanding – or humanity in the bear's eyes."
Excellent.
The bears
are
the aliens.
That's a good use of alien. That totally works.
All right. Well, Ammon, what's your favorite special effects?
Wait, what's your favorite alien, Roy?
Oh, no, I said Timothy Treadwell.
Oh, Timothy Treadwell. Okay, sorry. Favorite special effects?
Mm-hmm.
All right. The fact that Werner Herzog didn't show some things. I'm really grateful that he did not regale us with the audio of I think a lesser documentarian would have used the audio, and he did not. Mm-hmm. And similarly, when Timothy Treadwell is trying to dox the Forest Service again, you know, nowadays somebody would be like, "Oh, we're keeping this in as part of the controversy." And he's very clear. He's like, "We're not going to – like, he does something. He assaults these people. We're not going to participate in that assault."
Yeah.
So good for Werner for knowing what to show and what not to show.
Good FX.
John, what about you?
Okay. The end of Journey of Natty Gann when they hug, and I assume it's in front of a blue screen because they destroyed a forest, and so that should be effects. Yeah.
Okay. So from Jeremiah Johnson, when he's being attacked by the wolves, I'm pretty sure they have a bunch of stuffed wolves that they keep throwing at him and like smashing their faces against him.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
So, all right. Your favorite location, John?
Okay, I'm gonna go with Bearclaw's cabin with the skin lamps and bone furniture, kind of reminiscent of the
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
All right. What's your favorite location, Ammon?
Utah, right where we grew up, the Aspen Grove, where you could see like specific places that I definitely remembered hiking or doing Klondike Derby as a Boy Scout.
Ah, so pretty.
Nice nostalgia. Yeah.
So I went with the Grizzly Maze in Alaska. Not that I want to get eaten by bears, but but it is really pretty. And so Alaska, especially during the summer, Alaska is just so beautiful and it's so green. But again, like, you know, don't get eaten by bears. So
did you guys get the sense that he is Grizzly Maze his name or anyone else's name?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think it's his name.
All right. I definitely imagined like an actual maze, which is my own. But
just like he has to navigate this maze and there's just bears wandering in the maze. All right. So your favorite song, Ammon?
That's an easy one. Ballad of Jeremiah Johnson.
That's pretty good. What do you got?
I did also like the ending of Grizzly Man, but Ballad of Jeremiah Johnson is solid.
Well, I thought it was interesting how at the end of Grizzly Man, they just sang the Ballad of Jeremiah Johnson for the ending credit. All right, John, what's your choice?
Okay, I'm going to go. I knew you guys were going to pick the Ballad of Jeremiah Johnson. So also in Jeremiah Johnson, there's something called Violence Montage, and it was 45 seconds long, and it was just like, you know, just some humming. Tapping of the guitar a little bit. So it's like where it got the most rollicking, the Violence Montage.
Crow-killing music?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I picked a song that the crow that he didn't kill sang to – that I guess saved his life by singing.
Yeah.
I can't kill someone who's got such a singing voice. Yeah. So that was nice. So, okay. Guest star, John.
Okay. Sorry. I have too many guest stars. I have to mention all of them. Kind of a tie to Werner Herzog and Timothy Treadwell, because this is obviously Timothy Treadwell's only guest appearance. But I might award it to young Tanya Tucker, who plays a little girl in Jeremiah Johnson.
Ah, okay.
Country star Tanya Tucker, yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Well, Ammon, what about you? Favorite guest star?
So, time-traveling saver of children, Scatman Crothers, who helps to teach us what's his name? What's the kid's name in The Shining?
Danny.
Danny.
Danny. Yeah, thank you. Danny, how to use his shin. but then absolutely performs no other useful service at any other point in the movie. Also plays Natty Gann's buddy Sherman, the quick-thinking vendor of small items that they have a real racket they run together. So that was nice to help her out, too. And he tries to keep her from riding the rails, which was a wise choice of his.
Yeah. If only she had listened. Then she wouldn't have died in that train accident. Everything after that train accident is a dream. So, okay, my guest star is Werner Herzog. So, my external recurring character is Scatman Crothers because we did do The Shining. John, who's your external recurring character?
Did we do The Shining?
Have we not done The Shining? Are you saying we haven't done The Shining?
I feel like we haven't done The Shining.
Oh, my gosh.
Just maybe we did.
Have we just watched it so many times that...
It just seems like only now... Maybe we did. We just watched it so many times that I can't remember if we've done The Shining.
You are right.
You're going to have to pick Scatman Crothers for Transformers the movie.
Oh, did you guys watch that?
Yeah, he's Jazz, right?
Oh, I had no idea. But since I was wrong with my reference, I'll just go with Ray Wise. So take that. Ray Wise, RoboCop, and The Journey of Natty Gann. Wow, I could have sworn we did The Shining. Go ahead, John. It's your turn.
We could watch The Shining this coming Halloween.
We could. I guess it depends on what you pick, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Honorable mention to Ray Wise, of course. RoboCop, just last podcast. John Cusack from Better Off Dead. Meredith Salinger from Dream a Little Dream. But the winner, Jed the Wolf Dog. The dog in Journey of Natty Gann is the same dog in The Thing.
Oh, seriously?
Wow.
Yes. I thought you were going to jump right all over that. Like, oh,
he's a method actor of a pup.
Yes.
All right.
Well, it's easy when you're the thing. You can just imitate anything you want. Yeah.
Ammon, do you have an external recurring character?
Yeah, so I think that we have a whole story there, right? So, like I said, we never got Howard's last name. It was probably Howard Palmer. So he and Natty eventually get married. They settle in the woods of Washington. Mm. One of their grandchildren becomes a horrific monster thanks to a demonic possession, i.e. Leland Palmer. The other family moves back to the Midwest, marries into a family named Nash, and eventually becomes a low-level thug named Leon C. Nash in RoboCop. But they both sent Maddie again because she is Saul's only child, so there's no other possibility.
Yes. Okay, very – wow.
All right. Ammon, have you ferreted out an internal recurring character from these three films?
Yes. This all three movies feature one character. The intrusive hand of big government coming in and causing trouble.
Yeah.
That's... trying to stop Tim Treadwell from hanging with the bears, trying to make what's his name, Jeremiah Johnson, leave his family to go help out some dumb settlers who got lost.
Jeez.
And trying to put Natty Gannon in an orphanage. What the hell?
Yeah. All right, John, who's your internal recurring character?
Internal recurring character. The actor's name is Paul Benedict. And Paul Benedict plays the frozen man, Hatchet Jack, that Jeremiah Johnson finds. And then later in the same movie, he plays the Reverend who guilts Jeremiah Johnson.
Oh my gosh, that's the same person.
Yeah, into coming and saving the people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so my internal recurring character, and it depends on how you read the sentence, or this two-word phrase, but it's eating grizz.
Oh. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Because... you could be eating a grizz, or a grizz could.
Yeah, we call it the subjective and the objective genitive, or the double genitive is the grammatical term you're going for.
Yeah, very good. Oh. All right, best death, John.
All right, well, I was going to pick a really obvious one, but then I decided to go with a different one. And my best death is the Timothy Treadwell murder tape. It was destroyed, I assume.
Because he was murdered?
Yeah.
One would hope.
Okay.
That's a good choice.
The kill tape.
All right, Ammon, what's the best death? What's your favorite death?
My favorite death? I mean, because most of them were horrifying, so I'm going to go with Hatchet Jack, because that's his name, right?
Yeah.
We decided. Yeah. Off stage, we see him with the rifles frozen, and his death was not meaningless, because he gave Jeremiah Johnson his rifle.
Yeah, a good one. I feel like freezing to death... that's probably a pretty good way to go.
I think it's horrifying, but...
But I think you reach a certain point in which you don't feel anything anymore.
That's true. Yeah. It's horrifying until you stop feeling something, then it's fine. Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to go with Reverend Lindquist, which we don't see him die, but there's no way he doesn't die, and I'm really glad that it happens.
He sucks.
All right, Ammon, who's the villain, the biggest villain in these films?
Well, so related to Reverend Lindquist, Reverend Lindquist's buddy, Lieutenant Mulvey, just go around. You don't need to go through the burial grounds. Yeah. Just go around. Don't make Jeremiah Johnson leave his happy family. Just don't be a jerk, man.
Yeah, what we don't see is Jeremiah Johnson killing Reverend Lindquist and Lieutenant Mulvey or whatever his name is. Yeah. All right, John, who's the villain?
Okay, I'm glad Ammon didn't take it, because I thought he would, based on his sum up of Journey of Natty Gann. I think the villain is Connie, the person who runs the hotel that Gann exists in, and I pick her as villain because what she was asked to do, what she couldn't do, was nothing. All she had to do was just sit there in her little hotel office, and she couldn't do that. She was such a busybody that she had to call the cops and say, you know, all she had to do was just watch Natty Gann just be Natty Gann and be like on the streets half the time. So I don't know why she had to do what she did.
You know, she's the mom from My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
I think I did know that.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think Katie looked that up while we were watching it. She's like, hey, she's in My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Yeah.
Well, my villain is depression, both the depression in The Journey of Natty Gann and the depression that drove Timothy to go get eaten by a bear.
Yeah,
good one.
All right, John, who's your hero then?
my hero, I don't know. It's too tragic to be a hero, but I'm going to put her as the hero. But I put Amy Huguenard as the hero because she tried to stop the bear.
She could have run away, and she tried to rescue Timothy. So, yeah.
That's sad.
That is sad. All right, Amy, who's your hero?
I mean, there's only little Natty, right? Like Natty? She's plucky, and she just does her best. Yeah. And Jeremiah Johnson and Timothy Treadwell are not so great in my view. So
I'm going to go with Saul Gann. You know what? Life is tough, and he has to make tough choices, but he does what's best for his daughter and, deforest a forest. But he does what's got to be done. Anyway, there you go. Hits him. And we know for a fact that he's going to have to deal with the death of his daughter, Lara, later. And so
it's going to be hard on him.
All right, movie goof. I'm just going to start because Jeremiah Johnson, the movie, for some reason, thought that it was a 3-hour musical. And I think that's a goof. But go ahead, Ammon. What's your movie goof?
My movie goof, and it was a big one. It doesn't happen on stage, but we know it happens. Timothy Treadwell actually got eaten by one of the extras in Grizzly Man.
Oh, man. Dang. All right, John, what's your movie goof?
Okay, my goof is in The Journey of Natty Gann when they're at the dogfighting ring, and one of the bets is Pit to die, which I interpreted as Pitbull will lose is one of the bets, but there isn't a Pitbull fighting in the dogfight.
What was the other dog? I don't remember now.
It was like a poodle.
Yeah.
A flying poodle.
I think there was like a Doberman and brown gray dog.
All right. Funniest moment, John.
I think it was coming across Del Gue when he's just a head in the ground.
That's a solid choice.
That's pretty good. What do you got, Ammon?
That's my honorable mention, but my favorite moment, and I think it would actually inspire literally everything Joss Whedon does for the next 2 decades, is when Howard, a.k.a. John Cusack, is on the train and the wolf is not getting on. He goes, "He'll never make it. He'll never make it. He made it." And that's, as far as I can tell, every trope in every Joss Whedon movie ever, right? So there you go.
So I'm going to go with, because these movies aren't really comedies, but I was tickled by when Jeremiah Johnson and his family are going to bed for the first night and his wife derobes and lays down, and then Jeremiah Johnson has his, "Hold on, time to check out some boobies." And so
Jeremiah Johnson,
he's a man.
Yeah.
All right. Key of D minor moment. We've had our fun. That fun is over. What's the saddest moment, Ammon?
I got to scroll down. That's somewhere else in my thing. Okay. Watching Tim Treadwell's paranoid, angry rant against
the park ranger.
This is when you realize that, you know that he's, mentally ill.
Yeah.
But it's very obvious here, right? Like, you're just watching a person who has no sense of what's going on. The people who are trying to save his life, he hates them with a passion. And it's just really kind of sad and pathetic. Hmm.
John, what's your weeping instantly moment?
The scene in the same movie, Grizzly Man, where Werner Herzog listens to the audio of the death, and then after he finishes, he says to Penny, I think you need to destroy this.
And then she sells it online.
And yeah. Sad.
We don't know that, by the way.
We don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so I have an honorable mention for the burning down of the hobo camp, but I'm going to go with Jeremiah Johnson coming home to Death Cabin, which is pretty sad. Mm-hmm. You know? Sad enough to make you go kill 300 crow and eat their livers. So, all right. Well, what the heck? What's your what the heck moment, John?
I did not know the story of Jeremiah Johnson was about Jeremiah Johnson going full Lancelot on the town and killing everybody.
Okay.
And so I was surprised at that.
They had huge tracts of land, though.
Yeah, so I hadn't seen this movie in 20 years, but as we were getting ready to watch it, I'm like, this is the movie where he kills a lot of Indians in revenge for his wife, right? So, yeah. All right, Ammon, what's your what the heck moment?
The description of the coroner talking about dissecting the bear. It's not enough when he says that they pulled out four garbage bags of human remains. He goes, and clothing. It's that and clothing when I'm just, yeah, like, full body shudder. Right?
So that's my pick as well. That quote's pretty bad. But I'll honorable mention the kiss. The kiss.
Yeah.
So. All right. What's your favorite quote, Ammon?
I wish I could. I was trying to find the beginning of this quote because I love the beginning. The end is very widely quoted, but it's our buddy Werner, who's deeply quotable, when he's talking about and he says, Timothy Treadwell has an optimistic view of the universe. I disagree. I believe the common denominator of the universe is not harmony, but chaos, hostility, and murder.
Which is why he directed Dead Snow, because that's exactly what that's about.
I mean, that quote on its own is great, but I really do wish that people contextualize it, because it's like he's having a dialogue with, again, a seriously delusional person.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, he thinks this, but I think he's wrong. It's like, well, he also got eaten by a bear because he thought he could live with that. So,
and apparently thought he was a bear. Why didn't we get to see the footage of him thinking he's a bear? Anyway, all right, John, what's your quote?
Ammon, pick mine. All I wrote down is, I believe chaos, hostility, murder.
Okay. all right, so my quote is from Jeremiah Johnson, and it's a Del Gue quote. And he says, I ain't never seen him, but my common sense tells me the Andes is foothills and the Alps is for children to climb. Keep good care of your hair. These here is God's finest sculpturings, and there ain't no laws for the brave ones, and there ain't no asylums for the crazy ones, and there ain't no churches except for this right here. And there ain't no priests except the birds. By God, I are a mountain man, and I'll live till an arrow or a bullet finds me, and then I'll leave my bones on this great map of the magnificent.
That's solid.
He talks a lot.
Yeah.
For a clown, that's some profound wisdom. Although I hear the Andes are actually pretty big.
Yeah. Well, the Alps, too. So, yeah. My honorable mention, though, was a bear diet consists of liberals and Dems. All right. John, your favorite scene?
Jeremiah Johnson, the cabin building montage, where they cut down the logs and build a cabin.
You know, for his first cabin, that's a heck of a cabin.
It's nice. Kind of, you hit your head on the way in, but, you know, not bad.
Ammon, your favorite scene?
Natty Gann's montage, Life as a Street Urchin. It just looks great. I wish I was a street urchin in the Depression.
Okay. So, from Jeremiah Johnson, I'm going with the parting with Del Gue for the last time, and we had the quote, but, you know, them trying to get each other killed is, that's in the past. And now they're, you know, they've just kind of had their moment, and they're both pretty sure that they're going to get killed sometime in the near future. And I don't know, it just, it meant something. And I think we just got to kind of glory for the last time in the movie and in the beauty of their surroundings. So that's that. Ammon, your favorite actor?
Favorite actor. I love that John Cusack as Howard managed to bring in an 80s teen rom-com role into a movie about the 30s.
I know, really. I can't like take him seriously as a 1930s hobo on the train.
Okay. He really read to me much more, even more than like Better Off Dead, the Say Anything John Cusack is what I really imagined him as in the whole movie.
Remember the part where he was like holding up the what are those record players with the big speaker, like the big horn speaker?
Gramophones, yeah.
The gramophone.
Like he's holding it above his head. Yeah. Playing it for Natty Gann.
And it's just playing like vigorous fiddle music for her. All right, John, who's your favorite actor?
Okay, there's a scene in Jeremiah Johnson where Jeremiah Johnson is like trying to like fish in the stream, and he's standing in the wrong spot and he doesn't know what's going on, and then he jumps to a completely different spot and then pulls out a fish.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense. So I'm giving the best actor to that fish, consummate professional, who was on his mark when Robert Redford wasn't on his mark.
Oh, very good. So my best actor is very specifically the Robert Redford in GIF form. That's just it's a stirring performance. So, all right,
it really conveys what it's supposed to. Yeah.
I have no unanswered questions. Do any of you guys have anything that we didn't already cover?
Ammon, Oh, there was something. It looks like I didn't write it down. There was something that you said that I had a question about, and I thought I had it written down, but I don't. Sorry. Mm. Okay, I do have another question, though.
Okay.
At one point in Jeremiah Johnson, he and his family are playing soccer. And the soccer ball looks to be like a tribble that they found.
Wasn't it supposed to be some sort of version of lacrosse? Didn't they have sticks?
Yeah, oh, looked like yeah, lacrosse. They had sticks. They had like – it was kind of like hockey kind of lacrosse or something.
It was a giant and they were hitting this that Swan coughed up or something. So
yeah, it was like a big hairball. I think like it could be just like one of those like malformed like litters, you know, where it's just like – sometimes just a ball is there,
it could be a grizz kneecap or something.
It could be a fox baby that one of the foxes has discarded from the den, as we see happen.
Oh, man. All right. Any unanswered questions for you, Ammon?
I mean, I have a lot of questions about Grizzly Man, but they're more sort of existential. I think overall, I think we've covered this stuff.
Okay. Well, we have... Yeah. Five special awards. Who was the Alonius protagonist, Ammon?
So, as we've discussed, none of them. But I think eventually, in the long run, it eventually becomes Jeremiah Johnson.
I think you're right. I agree with that. John, what's your take?
I went with Timothy Treadwell because the thing is, he sets up so many of those camera angles that I got to think, okay, even if his girlfriend was with him, she was sleeping in for those camera setups, at least.
Yeah, she's okay. Like, I'm gonna. You go find the bears. I'm gonna like not be by the bears.
Yeah.
So, who's the most skilled hunter in these films, John?
Well, Bearclaw is the most skilled hunter. He can like
he wiped out
he can
all
kill Grizz in his sleep.
Yeah, I agree. I got Bearclaw as well. Ammon, who? What's your pick?
Wolf.
Wolf. He did bring her a rabbit, didn't he?
Yeah, like she gave him like this little scrap of food, and he's like, "I'll repay you with a rabbit." Like, what a mensch! Mm.
All right, Ammon, who deserved to be alone the most?
Oh, that's easy, Tim Treadwell. Oh. That dude. If we he was alone, we would all be happier.
So actually, I picked Bearclaw.
That nice guy's choice. Just
an animal murdering machine. He should. He deserves to be all alone. All right, John, who's your alone person?
Okay, I actually picked Natty Gann to be the most deserving because because I think she was like the best at it somehow. Like she was kind of the most unscathed. So maybe she should just, you know, just stay there.
Because she hardly had to spend any time alone?
Yeah. She needs more time alone. Who's, maybe, I don't know.
What's the best animal in these films, John?
Best animal. I have Penny's bear earrings. Did you notice that? She had bear earrings.
No, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, bears.
Nice. Ammon, who's your favorite animal?
I have the fox buddy that Tim Treadwell hangs out with. Fox is like a much more manageable animal to like want to raise awareness about and live with.
Okay, so there's two bears in the Grizzly Man that fight, and the loser is named Mickey, but I don't care about losers. I care about winners. So it's the bear that I swear was going to eat the head off of the other bear in what's the most violent bear fight I guess I've ever seen. I don't watch too many bear fight videos. I've got like volumes 1 through 5, but then I stopped. The winning bear, that's the best animal.
I think it was Sergeant Brown, right?
Sergeant Brown.
Roy, you mentioned earlier how they did the filming in Natty Gann to get the dogs to fight.
Yeah.
Do you know how they got the bears to fight in this? Literally, they just were actually fighting. Like that was real.
it was Timothy.
And it made it really horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a moment, I was like, is that bear going to kill that other bear? I don't want to watch a bear kill a bear. All right. Well, Ammon... we need to replace the Jeremiah Johnson Man in the Wilderness GIF with a new Man in the Wilderness GIF. So what's your GIF-worthy moment from these films?
Tim Treadwell lifting up a giant handful of bear poop with gratitude in his eyes and a smile on his face.
All right, John, what do you think?
Yeah, it's one thing to be fascinated by things, but to just go up to their poop and be like, this came out of a body.
It was... What I'm touching was inside the bear. I'm practically inside the bear. Okay.
So strange.
Thank you for this gift.
Yeah. Okay. Honorable mention to the bear fight you guys mentioned, but the exact moment where that one bear just takes a massive crap in the middle of the fight. But I'm my winner for the alternate GIF is Natty Gann hanging out in one of those giant cylinders on the train, and then the train crashes, and then the cylinder rolls off the train.
That would be good. I could eat that.
Okay, so if you were going to search for the phrase "Am I ever tired?" what would come up is Jeremiah Johnson slumping to the ground after killing Four Crow. All right. All that's that. So we're here to rank these films from the third best all the way to the best. And Ammon, the way we do things, we'll start with you so that you can also be the first person to mention your number one. So Ammon, what is your third favorite of these three films?
So these three were all much closer than I thought they would be. I really struggled ranking them. There was things I loved about all of them. There were things I didn't like about all of them. Ultimately, I couldn't get over the time, like the Jeremiah Johnson massacring Indian thing was just a little too rough for me. So that is my least favorite. But I did actually like a lot about it, despite that one big glaring issue.
All right, Jonathan, what about you? What's your number three?
Okay, I'm changing mine at the last moment.
Well done.
I think I'm also going to go Jeremiah Johnson. I think I mentioned how much I love the credits, but maybe that overture was a bit too long. Mm. I did think it was pretty good, and I'm going to kick myself. It's probably going to be my number one tomorrow, but I'm going to pick Jeremiah Johnson because it was kind of exactly what I thought it would be, plus with more killing. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay. So, my number three, because I don't believe it belongs in this group of movies, and also because it kind of has the quality of a made-for-television movie, is The Journey of Natty Gann. Mostly I'm penalizing it because she spends like 5 minutes by herself, and so it doesn't belong. But anyway, so that's my number three, and I get to come around to my number two, and this was hard. But ultimately, my number two, because I'm a bad person, my number two is Grizzly Man.
So, why does that make you a bad person?
Because I love eating crow livers.
Okay. Right, yeah. All right, yeah, by process of elimination, bad person, fair enough. Okay, my number two, I went with Journey of Natty Gann, and I was going to make it an obvious three because it was an obvious made-for-TV movie, and it was. But then I thought, you know what? I thought it would be way cheesier and way Disney-er than it was, because there was a lot of, because it was more beautiful than I thought, and the film stock was much better, and you know, there was also all the labor stuff and the tree stuff, and she throws some good punches and she throws a bunch of rocks, and so I don't know, there was just a little bit more than I was expecting, and I think it could have been way more of a simplistic Disney movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, I expect this to be my number three choice going into it. Mm-hmm. But, like, I have to say, like, it almost became my number one. But it is my number two also. But, like, yes, it's a kid's movie. But it's actually a pretty good kid's movie.
Yeah,
like, it's a solidly done piece of work, right? Like, I came away from it much more impressed than I thought I would. I thought that, you know, I love Ray Wise anyway. Mm-hmm. So I was delighted to have – I'm rewatching Twin Peaks with my older kids right now. So watching him care so much about one child, and then, you know, I won't give spoilers in Twin Peaks, but let's say he's not a great dad in Twin Peaks. But I think he's a great actor. I think he's got an expressive face. I thought John Cusack and Meredith Salinger, I thought they all did really pretty good jobs. It was like a solidly done, yeah, it was a kid's movie, but it was pretty good.
Do you think the movie would have been better if John Cusack had been replaced by Tommy Kirk?
Absolutely. That would have been my number one for sure.
the 1960s Tommy Kirk?
Yes.
The Misadventures of Merlin Jones Tommy Kirk?
Yes.
Flubber?
Yeah, okay. And the monkey's uncle.
He was owned by Disney for a good period of time, I think.
Yeah,
I think I read he was harshly owned. I think Disney like harshly fired him too. There's a whole story about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, by the way, Tommy Kirk movies is still one of our categories we could pick.
Is he? He's in Swiss Family Robinson, right?
Yes, he was the younger brother.
Oh, yeah,
right.
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay. By the way, okay. So your favorite is Grizzly Man.
Yeah. Which is again, like I went into it thinking. So the flip thing happened here. I love Werner Herzog. I knew a lot about this movie, but I'd actually never seen it. I didn't love it, but I still thought it was really good, but like it didn't quite have the Herzog panache for me that some of the other ones did. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean ultimately it's like I think Tim Treadwell is deeply unlikable, and that made it hard for me to love the movie. But you know, Herzog still is an amazing filmmaker, his meditations are amazing, and the story is really compelling. So all those things made it still a really good movie, but it was not my favorite Herzog, but I still liked it a lot.
So this movie could have been different, right? If it was about someone who like turned their back on their corporate career and they were genuinely protecting an endangered species as opposed to harming a thriving species that's really not in any danger.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. So you guys both have Grizzly Manager number ones then.
Yeah. And pretty much what Ammon said, like I'm going to wind up thinking about this movie more than the others, even though I kind of like I didn't learn a great deal because I knew what Grizzly Man was about. But it's just it's still the same thing. It's just I feel like it doesn't come to any conclusions, but it's just an exploration of like, OK, here's what happened. I still have that like the same amount of knowledge, but I'm still like, I guess, asking myself the same questions about what our place is and I don't know. It's just like, it's not as deep as I want it to be. It's just a very simplistic thing, but also, I don't know. There's something to think about in that simplicity too.
Yeah. It's not even teaching a lesson or anything. It's just mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, that was wonderful. Ammon, thanks for coming back. We're so glad.
You're not going to tell us why you love Jeremiah Johnson so much, though? Or I guess you did.
Yeah. I think it's beautiful. I love just looking at it. And I think I read the Jeremiah Johnson character a little differently than you guys. I kind of take it that he had his moment of revenge and now he's just defending himself against these Indians. But then again, he is in their territory. So I don't know. There's mixed feelings, but I don't know. I thought the story was pretty good, and I just love watching it. It's just a beautiful film to watch, and it's not like Out of Africa, where it's a beautiful film to watch, and I want to kill myself while I'm watching it. So just really enjoy it, and it kind of makes me miss home a little bit because we lived in the mountains. So
yeah, me too. All that part, definitely, for sure.
Yeah, all right then. So this is where we would do future business, and I would have Melissa come on, who...
Well, it looks like we can't get Melissa on the phone right at this moment, but we're going to have her call in to the number that we said, and she's just going to reveal her movies on the voicemail, like everybody else should. So we're going to just play that right now and then get right back to it.
So this is Melissa Martinez, and I'll be on the podcast in just a few days. And I have my three movies to pick. Now, the first one should be no surprise to anybody because I'm kind of an evangelist for this movie. And the only reason why I agreed to even come on this podcast is because I just want more people to watch this. So all three of you who listen to this podcast get to watch Barfi, which is an unfortunate name in English, but a great name in Hindi, which is the language that this movie is in. So lazy people who do not like to read subtitles need not apply here. But it's a movie out of India. It's kind of half Charlie Chaplin farce, half drama, half love story. And yes, that's three halves, I understand, but this movie is basically like one and a half movies. It's just really great. So I hope everybody enjoys it. The second movie is called Citizen Ruth, which stars the great Laura Dern and just kind of a murderer's row of actors. And it is the directorial debut of Alexander Payne, who I'm pretty sure y'all have watched some of his movies before. He's done some really great stuff. I particularly like Sideways. And the third and final movie Because the other two are kind of dramedies, you know, that they mix comedy and drama together. I had to have a bummer movie because I'm Gen X and that's what we do. So the third movie is called Maria Full of Grace. And I guess I'll explain why I picked that one when I actually go on the podcast. But it has Catalina Sandino Moreno in it, who I've had a crush on for a long time. And I think she's just completely resplendent in this movie. But it will probably make you cry. In fact, all three of these movies might make you cry. Well, maybe not Citizen Rose. But hopefully y'all enjoy them, and I'm really looking forward to talking to them with you. Bye.
Do we want to record our reaction? Those are going to be great films. I'm
those
really looking
will
forward
be
to them.
Great. Thank you, Melissa. Hey, no, okay. Okay, well, let me quickly say I just found my question I wanted to ask, sure. But I lost.
Oh, nice.
This isn't – it's like such a not great question, but it's a question I legitimately had. Okay, Ammon, you said your favorite moment was when John Cusack was saying to the dog, he's not going to make it. He's not going to make it, you know, while the dog is running next to the train.
Yeah.
And then the dog leaps into the train. 2 minutes before that, they're all standing outside the train like, hey, the train's moving. Let's get on. And so Elizabeth Salinger and John Cusack get on the train. The wolf runs off. And then they're like, oh, I guess the wolf is gone. And then a minute later, the wolf is seen running next to the train and jumps dramatically on.
Yeah.
What did the wolf have to do?
Pee.
Like, what was so important to the wolf?
Yeah, that it
like, hey,
train.
Wait a second. I've got an errand to run before the train moves.
Well, because we know he eventually hooks up with wolves in Washington, right? I think that it's like he heard the howl and remember Howard's like, oh, that's a female wolf. He's going to go mate. But then, like, she's like, no, actually, like, he, like, saw her and he, like, swiped left. And then he jumped on the train. He's like, all right, see ya.
These humans are better companions than you.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, what we can talk about is that Melissa's community service has been decided. And I'm a little surprised at the choice, but we're doing primary colors movies, which means that whatever gets picked by the Facebook guys, that color's out. And then I think I get next pick, and then I think it's John. Is that right, John? I think you and I discussed this.
Yes, yeah,
because you're mad that you're going to get stuck with yellow.
Yeah.
So the colors are red, blue, and yellow. I really know my primary colors really well.
Yes. So
and you aren't just going to do red and blue from the Kreslowski
that's
talk
possible.
Video.
Three colors?
And then just skip white.
So
I don't get a pick, but that's my recommendation.
So it, I mean,
oh, I know it is.
It who's to say if one of those two movies isn't going to come in? My guess is we're going to get a red movie from the fans.
All right.
So
I'm gonna tell you what I'm gonna nominate right now. Raise the Red Lantern. Unless you've already seen that.
Oh, nope. Ammon, that's a fine choice. And
I'm going to put that on the page.
I will. So I will say that that our group on Facebook is really into Chinese art films. So
good.
Yeah.
Well, you guys did In the Mood for Love, which was a crowd favorite.
Yeah.
The crowd being me.
All right. So John and I found that there is like half as many blue films as there are red films, and there's only three yellow films that exist in the entire world. So. We'll make it work. And then after that, of course, we'll have three movies from Brooke. And we've had Brooke on before, so this time she gets to bring movies that she's never done before in her life. And that is what we'll do. And I think that is all we got.
So, okay.
All right.
Okay.
Ammon, thank you so much again. All the other guests are stupid, and you're the best. So
you're the best.
Well, I agree. No, just kidding. I love all the guests, and many of them I've known for a long time. Yeah. But I always have fun. Thanks again for having me, guys.
Oh,
all right. Yeah. Come back anytime. It's always fun to have you. Thank you for your insights. Thank you for your laughs. Thank you for your smile, Jif.
And thank you for your service. I really enjoy this. Great podcast. Longtime fan of the show. First caller. It's not my first caller, but that's No, thanks for having me, guys. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll sign you up again next year for sure.
Yep. Yep.
No, I'm
plan on it.
Yep.
All right, take care. So one of the things that John wants to say but can't because Katie won't let him is that the coroner did what he had to do with the bodies, but then they had to bring in the girlfriend who ends up with the watch, and they had to say, "Excuse me, ma'am, could you identify these four garbage bags of your boyfriend?"
I think maybe I don't know how bad the audio is, but maybe it kind of makes it worse. It kind of makes it more legendary. It's like, okay, no one can hear this. Please destroy this.
It's so bad that you can't even. Yeah.
Yeah, but okay.
It's
by
just,
the way,
it's just the Amityville Horror opening is all this actually.
No. By the way, listeners of this podcast know that we do outtakes at the end of every podcast. Just listen for this outtake because we've gone ahead and added the death of Timothy Treadwell in the outtake of this podcast. So go ahead and listen for that.
Well done, John.